One huge savings event ends Sunday. Don't miss it.
WRIF Detroit presents Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. It's, had a lot to say on a lot of other subjects, but what's going on in Iraq tonight, I guess probably the getting even on towards morning there now, is pretty disturbing. I don't know if all of you have seen the news, but there's been a major uprising against the United States in Iraq. It's not exactly portrayed like that in much of the American news media. In fact, here's what it says in the Reuters account. Najaf, Iraq, supporters of an anti-American cleric rioted in four Iraqi cities Sunday, killing eight U.S. troops and one Salvadoran soldier in the worst unrest since the spasm of looting and arson immediately after the fall of Saddam Hussein. The U.S. military on Sunday reported two Marines were killed in a separate enemy action in Anbar province, raising the toll of American service members killed in Iraq to at least 610. Now, I always say that I never watch television. I don't think there's much to even make it worthwhile for someone interested in learning about world events, let alone learning about what's beneath the surface that controls the events that are reported, to watch television. I mean, I do this for a living. I mean, I write for a living. I, well, not as much as I used to, but I still do write. And I do this as one of the focal points of my, work in the world. So if I thought that there was stuff on television, as much as I dislike television, if I thought there was stuff on there worth looking at, I'd love to watch it every day. It's virtually empty, and you can learn just as much, probably 10 times more, by reading. However, oftentimes the visuals are extraordinarily striking, and sometimes they speak. Remember the old thing about a picture is worth a thousand words? Well, with Photoshop and the way you can diddle around with any photo image, I'm not so sure that that's the case anymore. But in terms of television, and what I saw this evening was amazing, and I was watching Foxhole News, that grand cheerleader for war, and the one who, when they, I don't want to get off on a whole thing about them. But what they were saying and what they were showing was extraordinary. And the news commentator was interviewing a general. And the general was saying, stability is returning to Iraq. There's great progress being made. We're working with the Iraqi people for stability and safety and economic development. And they're showing these scenes of a mass uprising, tens of thousands of people streaming through Baghdad and these three other cities. And it was not rioting. It was a purposeful attempt. I mean, when you think of what is the political state ultimately about, it's an armed body of men, because once we get beyond civility, for those that want to act outside of the existing political authority, it's essentially men with guns that control a situation and determine who has the power to make decisions within any given society. Now, the so-called rioting, as the Reuters account said, they were trying to take over police stations. This is the center of the armed force of the state. So this wasn't rioting. This was an uprising. I don't know how many of you either remember or have now seen the return of the film The Battle of Algiers. The Battle of Algiers. If you go to my website, peterwerby.com, you can click onto it. You can see a trailer from it. The trailer, the previews, as they used to call it, it's like the film was done in 1965, and it was about the now my history is failing me. It was about the Algerian uprising of it. Was it like 1955 to 1960 or 1961, something like that? And the scenes, particularly because it's in an Arab nation. The troops trying to suppress the terrorists are European, in this case, of course, French. The parallels are so extraordinarily striking. And it's a film by Guido, what's his name? Pontecorvo, I think. Yeah, that was the Italian director, Pontecorvo. And the film apparently has such echoes of Iraq that the Pentagon recently showed it. And that's if you go to my site, peterwerby.com, you can click on it. It takes you right there. Then you can also go through the site and you can see the trailer from it and what have you. Now, the end of it all, or is that the proper phrase? Maybe the beginning of this is contained in the headline of a story that also came across the wire from Reuters today. By the way, Rick Fox, who is our producer and phone screener, is taking a long call. Very good. He's going to the phones now. This is also Rick Fox's last show as my producer and phone screener. So please, as I will, in fact, I'll use this opportunity to say thank you, Rick Fox, for all that you've done for the program, that you've put up with me, that you've been able to mind read my idiosyncratic brain and needs and everything like that. And thank you so much, because nobody can do any show like this all by themselves. All right, let's go back to the Battle of Algiers. No, it's the Battle of Baghdad. It's the Battle of Fallujah. It is the battle, again, of Arab people battling an invader. Well, maybe we don't see it like that, of course. We were responding, what's the story now? It was weapons of mass destruction. That turned out to be a big lie, a joke, a joke that Bush makes. Remember, he was at this dinner, and they showed us slides of him looking under furniture. Maybe the weapons of mass destruction are here. Well, now it's up to 610 U.S. deaths. 3,000 serious injuries, 18,000 medical evacuations from Iraq, and thousands and thousands of dead Iraqi civilians. And there's going to be more. There's going to be lots more. Right now, the U.S. military, the Marines, are surrounding Fallujah, where that awful desecration of the dead occurred the other day. And they're going to move in a punitive expedition. And this sounds identical to what the Israelis do in the West Bank and in Gaza. And without opening up that whole can of worms, whether you think the Palestinians are right or the Israelis are right, think of the reaction of the Palestinian people to the Israeli army. Think about the burning hatred that the Palestinians have towards the Israelis. And think about how that's reciprocated. Now, I didn't get to this one story. I'm jumping way ahead of myself. If you're just joining us, I was just going to I probably should have said this a long time ago. I was going to say I wanted to hear from some conservatives tonight, but you can just try to get. In fact, at one point I was going to say only conservatives, but I think our phones are about three quarters filled now at 313-298-WRIF. Anyways, there's this mass uprising going on in Iraq now. Four cities, 10 Americans dead, close to 30 severely wounded. The Marines about to enter Fallujah on a punitive expedition. And these were the people that were going to welcome us with flowers. This is Secretary of War Rumsfeld. I mean, all of these people should be impeached. Every one of them. I mean, they were going to impeach a president because he lied about who he was diddling. Nobody died when Clinton lied. And now the pile of bodies, the mass of dead, because of Bush's lies. If you don't like lies, maybe you can just go to miscalculations. The only person ever in the Bush administration to apologize for anything, for September 11th, for allowing that to occur on their watch, for this miscalculation of the invasion and occupation of Iraq, is Richard Clark, who was Bush's terrorism advisor. Now, Powell has expressed doubts about the basis for Iraqi weapons claim. He said, I guess he got bad information, what he gave to the entire world as he sat in the United Nations. Now, if you're listening to this broadcast, you heard me say this is a lot of rot. There's nothing in what Powell said at the United Nations that justified an invasion of Iraq that was true at all. It was all contrived. And they knew it. Now, you could say, I don't believe that. It was an honest mistake. Bad intelligence. They listened to the Iraqi National Council, which did feed them a lot of BS. I mean, that was sort of their fallback story. We got it from these guys. But how come I, a lowly WRIF rock and roll DJ that does one show a week on Sunday nights, how the hell did I know that everything that everyone knows now was a lie? Because I paid some attention. Because I suspect people in power right out of the gate. They're on television, they have a suit, and they're a politician. I don't believe a thing they say. I mean, they're every lie, if they say it's, you know, it's Sunday, it's probably Sunday. But you know, I would check my calendar. But it drives me to find out the truth of what they're saying, particularly when the issues are of life and death for hundreds of Americans and thousands of other people. I mean, most Americans don't count them. 10, 15,000 Iraqi civilians, what the hell? So there's this mass uprising in Iraq against the United States. And these aren't the remnants of Saddam Hussein. These aren't the Sunnis who were part of the Saddam racket. These are the Shiites, the people that were suppressed and repressed by Saddam Hussein. They're led by the cleric al-Sadr, whose father was executed by Saddam Hussein. They hated Saddam Hussein. They were probably as happy as hell when he got overthrown, but they are equally unhappy to have us there in their country. Now, I was getting to this headline. You don't even have to read the rest of the story. Because the rest of the story rings such a Pavlovian bell. Remember, you know, this Russian guy, he would ring a bell and the dogs would salivate when he brought out food, and then he wouldn't bring out the food and they would just ring the bell. Well, we ought to be drooling when we hear this. Drooling with fear and anger. Because we're being led down the primrose path that the United States has been before. It was called the Vietnam Syndrome. Many people thought the United States has learned its lesson, but no. George Bush and his pals, these arrogant, secretive, bullying, lying politicians, are now have us in a quagmire of the worst nature. And here's the headline. More U.S. troops may be needed in Iraq, key senator. That's U.S. Senator Richard Lugar, the Indiana Republican, who's the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. More U.S. troops may be needed in Iraq. I think you'd take out the may. And what are these troops are stretched pretty thin. They're stretched pretty thin. So maybe we're going to have a draft. I mean, they're not going to institute a draft before the 2004 elections. But any young person that votes for Bush may be voting themselves into the armed forces. And so what's the response to these people? Remember, there was the first story was that we were under imminent threat, immediate threat, gathering threat from Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. All right, well, it turned out to not be there. Well, what a surprise. And Bush and them knew they were faking this. I wonder what they thought. Well, you know, when they don't find any, we're liberating them. All right, we're going to liberate the Iraqi people. And again, they're saying, well, this is a small minority. That's what they said in Vietnam. That's what they say everywhere, all the time. That's what the French said about Algeria. That's what the French said about Indochina when they fought these wars of suppression against these people's uprising. And you know what? The French and the United States, with a few exceptions in Vietnam, won every battle, won every single battle. But lost the war every single time. Hundreds of thousands of Algerians were killed by the French. Hundreds of thousands of Indochinese in the 1950s as well were killed by the French. United States killed 3 million Vietnamese, mostly civilians. We lost 58,000, maybe a week's total or so for the Vietnamese. But eventually we got driven out. And so there's got to be some exit strategy immediately. And what I was going to ask the conservatives, the warmongers, the people that dutifully repeated every misstatement at best, lie at worst, how many more deaths of American soldiers is okay with you? How many more Americans are going to have to lose their lives for this fool's errand in Iraq that Bush has got us into? How many more young men and women are going to come home without stomachs and without legs, blinded, never being able to walk again? How many are okay with you? Well, it's zero for me. So I'm wondering, is it 10 more? 390, so it's an even 1,000? I mean, I know no one's going to say, oh, well, 5,000. We're willing to lose 5,000 men. And think about it. I mean, that's kind of an awful question. You might say, well, that's not a very fair question. Now, think about World War II. If someone would have said to you, if we were alive then, and said, how many, politically, how many American soldiers can we lose in the fight against Nazism and Japanese fascism? And I guess every one of us probably would have said, well, we'd like to minimize it, but we'll have to lose as many as possible because we will lose our freedom if these totalitarian forces are able to defeat the United States Army during World War II. If the United States loses, whatever that means, in Iraq, gets driven out, what's the consequences to us? Our pride? I don't want anybody to die for our pride. That's cost too many lives too many times before. So, conservatives, how many more deaths of American soldiers? I know you don't care about Iraqis. How many more deaths is okay with you? Ethically, politically, however many, however you want to slice it. And I guess if you're a conservative and you're under 26 or whatever the age is now, I'm just wondering why the hell you're not joining up. I remember one guy that did. A lot of people in our neighborhood, in fact, some still do, have that blue and white sign that says no war. And all of a sudden, on this lawn, two houses down and across the street, there's this handwritten sign that says war. This is before the war started. And my wife and I were walking, and she says to this young guy on the porch, if you're so big for war, why don't you go join? And he says, I'm joining. I'm leaving tomorrow. So I thought, well, at least got the courage of his convictions. I don't even know if he's still alive. He might be one of the young men that lost their lives today in this mass uprising in Iraq. Also, conservatives, call 313-298-WRIF. How much of our tax dollars are you willing to expend? It's about $130 billion. Some of this goes directly to the Iraqis to pay them off, but most of it goes to American corporations that support George W. Bush that agitated for the war, and then the other half the racket knew they were going to get paid by you and I, the taxpayer, to rebuild the damage done by Bush's friends that destroyed Iraq. How about this headline? Detroit schools to eliminate 3,200 jobs. Did you see that? About 900 public school teachers and 2,300 other employees will be laid off by July 4th. In response to what officials said is a monumental financial crisis. 13% of the employees in the district. There's a $78 million funding shortage for this year and a $91 million shortfall next year. The officials say it left them no choice. So this is where our money's gone. We don't have enough to keep teachers in a poverty district employed. And all these killings that have gone on lately, like this latest grotesque one where this man bludgeoned, was it his family or his girlfriend? I think maybe it was his girlfriend's family. This, I'm not trying to say if we had teachers, this wouldn't have occurred. But one of the scripts of poverty is acting out the bitterness, the frustration, everything that comes with being poor in violence. So this is assuring. You can almost, I don't know if you want to even correlate it one-to-one, but reduce education, you can almost see crime go up. You can almost see crime go up. And what's going to happen to our young men and young women over there? Actually, now, some of the people that got over there aren't even that young. They're in their 30s and 40s. You see these stats, I mean, a lot of people don't even bother to read it. Most papers don't report it. But we start seeing the list. You can go to my website again because, you know, we should know this. But there's people in their 40s. But think about what's going to happen after the Marines attack Fallujah and bring law and order back to that city. In other words, bring it under U.S. control rather than under the control of the people that live there, the Iraqis. Do you think that there is a lot of tender-heartedness on the part of the men and women who are going to be going into Fallujah? Do you think that the people in all the units that have lost people to roadside bombs and snipers and attacks on their Humvees and that were aware, as I'm sure everybody was, of what happened in Fallujah, do you think that they now are thinking these wonderful people, the Iraqis who we have freed, or do you think that they see them as all occupying armies do, whether it's the Israelis in Palestine, whether it's the Americans in Vietnam, whether it's the French in Algeria and Indochina? Every one of them is our enemy. Any one of them could attack me. Every one of them supports the people that have already killed my friends and comrades. So we begin to develop people that look forward to destroying the people in the land that they occupy. Oh, Pete, no, that's not true. How about this from Reuters? Anti-American voices get louder across Iraq's whole story about that. It's talking about the people who burned and kicked the corpses of four American contractors, as they call them. You know, these men were armed mercenaries. Not that anybody should defile the dead in that way at all. But it's interesting that they don't want to, you know, it sounds like they're over there building water systems. Children join in as jubilant crowds played with the charred bodies. Ugh. Anyways, but that's not what I was talking about. Here, an American tank rumbles through Baghdad with bloodlust painted on its barrel. Another says, here it all is. Every occupying army. Here it is. Painted on the barrel of a U.S. tank's gun. Kill them all. Kill them all. That's what it says on the barrel of a U.S. tank rumbling through Baghdad. What this is going to create is a national uprising against the United States. In Vietnam, the tax dollars of you, your fathers, your grandparents, paid many loyal South Vietnamese into supporting the American occupation and invasion of Vietnam. They were part of the racket. They made out fine. And there'll still be plenty of people within Iraq that support the United States presence there, because they see the United States as being the key to them being elevated to economic prominence and lots of other things that they would like to accomplish. But thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, will begin to see the United States occupier. Our sons and daughters, our brothers and sisters, our community members, our neighbors, as the hated occupier. This is what Bush's lie has brought us. This is what his joke has brought us. His joke, oh, the weapons of mass destruction, maybe they're under the couch. Ha, 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 ha. But conservatives, tell me, how many more deaths, how much more money? That's what I want to hear from you. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby, and let's go to our phones. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, how's it going?
Going well.
My name is Chris. I'm from Livonia. I wanted to talk about George Bush not paying enough attention to what's going on here in America and paying more attention to what's going on in the Middle East.
Okay.
I think that with the elections coming up, he should be paying a lot more attention to, you know, the loss of jobs and stuff. I mean, the way I look at it is we have a lot of Americans here in our own nation suffering and losing their jobs and going into poverty because he wants to spend money on the war. And our companies and stuff are shutting down and, you know, are firing people because of what's going on, and they can't afford to pay people. So the way I look at it, there's more people suffering here than there are actually over there, you know, and I don't support the war over there anyways, just because of the American soldiers dying and George Bush's lies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think but I think that there's a lot more suffering going on over here than there is over there with all our families losing their jobs.
Well, there. I mean, I have a pile here, which I probably won't get to. It's called the Economy, and it talks about gas prices and why they're so high. It talks about the continuing loss of jobs. Talks about Bush's tax cuts, and I'll probably never get to talking about it because we're going to be focused on what's been happening over there. So I mean, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I mean. The way I see it, I mean, we're sending, I mean, companies, major corporations like Ford, I mean, are sending jobs to the Middle East where the conflict is, and I don't really see much point in that, you know?
Well, thank you so much. I agree with you, and wait a minute here. I got to take a look here because Shelby LaPree says, can you ask your engineer to turn up the stream volume? It's very low tonight. Well, it's set automatically, Shelby. Shelby is the webmistress of radiopower.org, radiopower.org. And I thought we had this settled because some of you had written in and said that the callers were very low if you're listening in some other city. If you're listening on WRIF in the Detroit area, it probably sounds, I hope it sounds just fine. However, if you're listening around the country, around the world, then it's a problem. So I don't know what the hell to do. I brought this to the engineer's attention when many of you emailed me. And unfortunately, I don't know. They said, oh, yeah, we've pumped up the compression, which means that brings everything up to the same level. Okay, people, man, are here. Warren wants to write about the draft. Kerry will have the draft. Want to bet? Says Warren. In other words, I said earlier that to re-elect Bush, he wasn't elected the first time. He lost the election. He was selected by his friends, father's friends on the Supreme Court. If he is elected this time, I said he would could very well institute the draft. Kerry will have the draft. Want to bet, says Warren. No, because I don't think put that outside the realm of possibility either, sorry to say. The script of poverty. Opening monologue is this is John listening in Pasadena, California, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. As Victor Hugo put it, every time you build a prison, you close a school. Interesting. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening,
Peter. This is Ed from Novi here.
Hi, Ed.
I got a comment to make, and I'm not sure if you quite have an answer for me. You know, a real concern for me is, and people don't think outside the box of Iraq. Right now, you got this Taliban and Al-Qaeda that's on the cusp, maybe not within the first month, but within 12 months or year, of overthrowing Musharraf and his government. Now, if the Taliban and Al-Qaeda overthrow Musharraf, which is a possibility...
In Pakistan,
Where are the troops going to come from to go in Pakistan and take care of this mess, because we're all tied up in Iraq with this deal?
Absolutely, and of course, Ed, the scariest thing, if there is either an indigenous uprising in Pakistan against the unpopular policies of Musharraf aiding the U.S., or combined with the external forces of the Taliban, that means they will have nuclear armaments.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, and you're right, because so far, depending, if you want to lowball it, the U.S., actually, I shouldn't say the U.S., we, the taxpayers, have expended $130 billion on the invasion and occupation of Iraq. And don't you think if they would have spent $30 billion and put troops in Afghanistan that perhaps they could have captured Osama bin Laden by now?
Oh, the Canadians are bailing us out in Afghanistan. About the only thing the Americans are holding down is the main city right there in Afghanistan. They've done a half-measure job in Afghanistan, and we're going to be strapped for armed forces if there's a big conflict over in Pakistan, which is a possibility because of this Iraq deal.
You got
something to think about. Hey, enjoy the show. Take care.
Thank you, Ed. Thanks for joining us. Ron is listening in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he wrote to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Somebody listening online, give us a shout and tell us how the stream sounds. The fine people at radio... I'll send them. Okay, I got it. Radiopower.org just said it's too low. He says, hey, Peter, time chain means I get you an hour earlier here. Outstanding. I honestly don't think you're going to get too many conservative callers. You speak too much truth and back yourself with facts. Reminds me of a fellow who recently became unemployed at the now defunct IE America radio network. Well, we can say his name. Mike Malloy. You can go to MikeMalloy.com. My pal. I used to broadcast on the IE America Radio Network, or maybe he was referring to me. I got fired for being too radical, though. We are going to line six, we are, but I had one little thought that's escaping me, but we'll take the call. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, hello, Peter.
Hi.
Hey, this is Justin. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say, with Bush in office, I truly believe that America has a greater threat to the world than Germany ever did. And the fact is that there is never no weapons of mass destruction, and I do believe that Bush and Colin Powell should be charged with criminal warfare.
Well, if they started a war under false pretenses, that does make them war criminals, but that would mean they would have to be brought to The Hague, and the United States will not represent the, or does not recognize the World Criminal Court, mainly out of fear that things like this are going to happen. And there are also so many courts want to press charges against Henry Kissinger for what he and his pal Nixon carried out in the 60s and 70s.
And it's a repeat.
Yeah. That's
absolutely
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that call. What do you mean? Why do you... Rick Fox gave me a strange look. All right. Ben is listening in Chicago. He writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com that the stream sounds okay from here. All right. That's good. Thank you, Ben. I want to get another... another one I wanted to read... sounds, Debbie from Boston sounds fine on a Mac in Boston, she writes. And, let me see, one more we'll get. I've had a low volume problem also, but after changing the master volume control of my computer, you sound just fine. All right, good. Let's take another call. Hi, it's WRIF and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, this is Tony from Roseville.
Hi, Tony.
I'm a SEIU Local 79 member, and I'm calling about a fight that's going on at Metro Airport.
Hmm. What's that?
With the workers in the Smith Terminal.
Yeah.
The new terminal. The Smith Terminal, there's a non-union company that the airport authority let come in and put the union janitors out of work.
Well, ain't that the way it's going? They're trying to stop people from making decent wages and...
Yeah, and in the new terminal, they haven't signed our contract yet.
Well,
there's the leader of the airport authority, Lester Robinson. If you want to call him, I can give you the number. I'm asking for your support and everybody's support to put a stop to it.
Now, this is his office number, not his home number.
Office number, yeah.
Yeah, what is it? Because, well, I'm a union man. I've been a member, a longtime member of the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, AFL-CIO. And so I always support my union brothers and sisters. What's the phone number?
It's area code 734, and the number is 942-3563.
And what should we tell them?
To put a stop to it, Knights is the company that came in.
Higher union labor, in other words.
And those union janitors got like 20 years, and they put them out of work.
Oh. Ain't this Bush's America?
Terminal.
Well, it was going to be at one time the third world was going to achieve our standard, but I think it's going the other way around. These bosses say, "Wow, man, we can get all this done in the third world for $1.50 an hour. In some cases, $1.50 a day. We can do that here."
And you can get a hold of our president Willie Hampton and Secretary Treasurer Marge Robinson at 1-800-LOCAL-79.
Okay. Well, good, Tony.
SEIU.
Thanks for that report, and call us back from time to time. Let us know how the struggle's going.
Okay, thank you for your support.
Well, thank you, Tony. You have it 100%, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Tutto Ristorante on Erie Street in Windsor. If it's not on the menu, Tutto chefs will custom make entrees to your liking. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's, home of the original square pizza since 1946. Visit the historical 6 Mile and Conan location today.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll at WRIF.com.
Musicians, for the first time ever, the biggest three-day savings event of the December holiday season comes to April.
Starting this Friday.
Save on thousands of guitars. Every shape.
Mark.
Every neck.
Gibson, Jackson, ERS.
Every finish. It's Guitar Center's Guitar-a-thon. With savings up to 78% off. Epiphone Quilt Top Les Pauls.
Half off.
Acoustics from Yamaha, Epiphone, and Takamine.
Starting at $99.
Amp from Marshall. Starting at $70. Digitech Multi-Effects. Only $59. Boss Pedals. $39. 10 sets of GHS strings.
Just $19.
And get this. Enter to win a VIP trip for two to the Crossroads Guitar Festival and an Eric Clapton signature Fender Stratocaster.
Guitar-a-thon me.
Savings in every department. Drums, recording, DJ, live sound. Buy any portable keyboard. Get a Yamaha stand and gig bag free. Guitar Center's Guitar-a-thon. 3 days. One huge savings event ends Sunday. Don't miss it.
One Michael Army Center, the ultimate recreational superstore.
Hi, Christine Michael here for Walt Michaels RV Center. Going on vacation can be expensive. Airfare, hotel, rental cars, meals, it all adds up really quick. Save some money on your next family vacation and go RVing in a Walt Michaels RV. It's very affordable, your kids will love it, and it's lots of fun. You don't need any reservations, you just go wherever you want, whenever you want. It's like having a vacation home with wheels. So save some money on your next vacation and go RVing in a Walt Michaels RV. Walt Michaels RV Center in Belleville has an RV for everyone's budget. So whether you want to rent it or buy it, just come by Walt Michaels RV Center in Belleville and enjoy miles and miles of fun with your family. We're on the North I-94 Service Drive in Belleville, also known as the Walt Michaels RV Mile. Or call us at 800-697-2500. We'll be looking for you.
I'm worried that there are things that are going to burn me.
I had butterflies. I was anxious.
Open house, that's somebody else's job.
I had to constantly be meeting people.
My mom was always on the phone.
I figured I could sell it on my own to save a little bit of money.
She was just wacko.
I don't even know enough to know that I don't know.
If you're thinking about selling your home, you need some help. Ask your agent if they're a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors.
For sale by owner, but not by this owner.
A message from your local state and national realtor associations.
Seasonal allergies are in full bloom, Ragweed.
A great time to make them suffer, Pollen.
Why take an OTC allergy medicine that stops working in 6 hours? Just one dose of once daily Allegra with fexofenadine lasts up to 4 times longer than one dose of most OTC allergy medicines. Comparison based on label directions. See our ad in Prevention Magazine. Visit Allegra.com or call 1-800-ALLEGRA. For people 12 and over, side effects are low and may include headache, cold, or backache.
Long-lasting Allegra takes the fun out of our allergy season.
Talk to your doctor. Today, take once daily Allegra. The relief goes on.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much. A terrible day in Baghdad, in all of Iraq, a major uprising against the United States occupation. 10 U.S. soldiers dead. Hundreds and hundreds of people have been wounded. About 30 Americans have been wounded. And I'm afraid this presages more to come. Already, Senator Richard Lugar, the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee of the Senate, said we need more troops. We need more troops. Vietnam all over again. And I was putting it out to the cons. Let's call them that. I'm putting it out to the cons. But how many deaths will they countenance? I mean, how many more Americans? Whatever it takes, hundreds more, thousands more. We're going to have another wall for those that died in Iraq for Bush's lie. And how many more? How much more in tax dollars are you willing to expend as we see our schools having to lay off, like in Detroit, 1,300 people? And the other thing was, last week, I noted that the conservatives have been on the wrong side of every social question since the beginning of this nation. They opposed the American Revolution, of course, and they, I usually tick off this litany. They supported slavery. They were against women's women voting. They were they supported every war based on a lie, like the Spanish-American War and the First World War and the Vietnam War. They were real big on that. They supported segregation. They were opposed to the union movement. They were opposed to women having equality, all of that. So they've been on the wrong side of everything. So I've been putting it out to the cons. Come on, there's got to be something you can say that I missed. Here, this proud moment in conservative history, in con history, where they actually were on the right side of history. So I got a couple letters. John, listening on the internet in Grand Rapids, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I heard you this AM on delayed internet broadcast, and you were discussing what conservatives have done for the country. I have a right-wing friend who I often discuss politics with, whom I challenge to name for me two things the conservatives have initiated, sponsored, and implemented which improve the general good or welfare for the country. I gave him that challenge over a year ago, and the only thing he could think of was the Hoover Dam. It turns out the dam was designed and funded prior to Hoover taking office, so he can't even claim that. All the cons can do is cut taxes and dismantle things others have done. I guess the cons serve a function, but it's a negative one. I'm not sure about the Hoover Dam. I think it was begun under Hoover, before Roosevelt, the guy that caused the Depression with the same kind of tax policies that Bush is putting across. But here, Elmos is listening in New York City. He writes to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Why, Peter, where have you been? The conservatives have been on the front line of making sure that burger flippers be counted as manufacturers. Oh, sure, they may not get paid like manufacturers, but hey, it's just money, right? Or wait, what about the pioneering cutting-edge idea of giving welfare to those who absolutely don't need it, like the corporations? Hey, it's spreading the wealth, after all. Oh, sure, it's bankrupting us to no end and destroying the economy in the long term, but hey, it's just money, right? Keep fighting, champ. He says, all right, so to the cons, there is the challenge, twofold. One, about Iraq. How many more deaths is okay in any way you want to count it, ethically, because when we say, yes, we support this continuing occupation that's going worse and worse and worse, it means more Americans are going to get killed. And then how much more in tax dollars, yours and mine, are we going to expend in Iraq for the corporations that are rebuilding Iraq, where our schools are going bankrupt and what have you? And the other thing, how much more terrorism will this inspire? And the other thing is, what have the cons contributed? I think zero, actually. They've been an impediment. But let's see. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi. How you doing? As for a conservative, I'm calling in.
What's the question, or what's the answer then? How many more deaths is Iraq worth in American lives?
Well, I don't want to see anybody die. I mean, zero. I mean, nobody wants to see anybody die, but right. I mean, we're in it, and we can't just pick up and leave.
Well, if we would have picked up and left in, say, 1965 from Vietnam, it would probably just be a little footnote where we had lost about 12 or 1,300 men by the arrogance of people like Lyndon Johnson and then, moreover, Richard Nixon. We wound up losing 58,000. I mean...
See, the thing is, though, we were there to help people, right?
No,
you're all about helping people, aren't you?
Yeah, but there was no intention. I mean, that's not in the rationale for the war until it was discovered there were no weapons of mass destruction. That we weren't there to help.
Well, you, okay, you want to talk about weapons of mass destruction. I mean, he has used weapons of mass destruction. I mean, you tried to spew out all these facts, but you ignore the fact.
Well, wait, there's certain, all right, I mean, I don't want to go over 100% of what we've gone over 1,000 times before. Yeah, everyone knows the nature of Saddam Hussein. What most people don't want to recognize, though, is the role that the United States played in propping up the Ba'athist Party that eventually brought Saddam Hussein to power, and how the United States cooperated with Saddam Hussein during that period where he gassed his own people. Bush is gassing the American people by this continual BS about weapons of mass destruction and the fact that you would actually think we're over there helping people. Why aren't people a little more receptive to being helped? Why was there a mass uprising today to where they've killed 10 more Americans?
Well, you just said it yourself, the Ba'athist Party and all that. Yeah, you know, sadly, it's a fact that the country is very segregated into different tribes or whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
I mean, Shiites and whatever. They don't always agree, and I don't know how we're going to make them agree.
Well, why is it our job to make them agree? How would you like it if this country was occupied by some foreign power that had deposed our government and was forcing our way of life? And listen, I would hate to live in the Iraq that these Shiites envision, which is essentially probably an Islamic dictatorship. They call it an Islamic Republic. But the fact that we are going to go in there and battle the people that we say we're supposed to be saving, which is looks like they're preparing, just as the Israelis have attacked, Palestinian cities and like Jenin and places like that. That's exactly what is being prepared for in Iraq now. It's going to go from where? Well, all right. How much more money are you willing to spend of our tax dollars where the tax base of the United States is eroding to the point where we can't even keep vital services such as Detroit schools going?
Detroit schools, that's a whole other issue because
Well, wait a minute. We're rebuilding Iraqi schools. You and I are paying Iraqi teachers. Our tax dollars. You work?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Work.
You pay taxes?
Yes,
part of what you earned last week is being shipped to Iraq to pay Iraqi teachers. They send over, in huge crates, $20 bills, in the millions, which are then paid to, like, Iraqi teachers.
And this electric, they're actually shipping crates of money?
Yes. Yeah. What do you think they're doing, writing them paychecks? I mean, we're paying the freight for tens of thousands of Iraqis. We're paying their salary in all sorts of different capacities. They don't have any money. The country is broke. And they're paid in dollars, yeah.
Well, they need to be helped. They're going to get help. I mean,
wait a minute. I don't mean to, we should, on one hand, have a generosity of spirit that extends around the world. I agree. But, if you're in a family and you found out that a father was giving all his money to the Salvation Army without enough money to feed his kids or put him enough clothing to go to school, wouldn't you wondering what the hell he's doing? I mean, don't you think Detroit ought to be, I don't know about you. I mean, I don't begrudge the Iraqis anything. And I think we owe them a lot given the unnecessary attack on their country. But, don't you think we ought to take care of Detroit before we try to take care of Baghdad?
I have no problem with taking care of Detroit, but I think Detroit's, they're getting money, and the main issue with Detroit is how they're handling the money.
Well, it's not. There's a $90 million shortfall. There's shortfalls in school districts all over the country. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. That's a conservative. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. This is Marvin.
Marvin squared.
How are you?
Good.
Good show so far tonight.
Well, thank you.
I called to report on the hash bash.
I heard there were 75,000 people there.
You outbid me this year.
I know. How many do you think were there?
Thousands, actually thousands were there. In a sense, I want to say everybody was there. Everybody was there.
You know, let me just stop you 1 second. The Hash Bash, because people now are listening all around the country and all around the world, is an annual drug policy protest against the so-called war on drugs, which is really just a war on our neighbors and our friends and us sometimes. And it's been going on for how many years, Marvin?
The war on drugs has been going on since about 1914.
Yeah, but
the hash bash has been going on since the early 70s.
All right, yeah. And so people assemble on the Diag, which is this area in the middle of the campus of the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, to do all sorts of stuff. And what did the thousands assembled in Ann Arbor last Saturday, yesterday? What did they do?
Well, they heard John Sinclair speak. They heard Jack Harris speak. They heard Chef Ross speak. They heard Marvin speak. And what I want to say is there was so much enthusiasm. It seemed to me that the people are so enthusiastic. And also people are really fed up. They're fed up with this war on marijuana. They're fed up with this war on us. And people were partying really hard. I've never seen so much partying going on and so much celebration. And yet there was a real sense of political consciousness. And it's very exciting. I think the war against marijuana in Michigan is doomed, and it really is. There's just too many of us.
Mm-hmm.
There's too many, especially with the medical marijuana initiative that's going to be on the ballot in August in Detroit, and also there's going to be a medical marijuana initiative on the ballot in Ann Arbor. So we're making some headway.
Now, here, this is from Ralph in Detroit. I don't know if you saw this. He said, did you watch the Peter Jennings news special about ecstasy? Jennings spent an hour debunking the government's stand that the drug ecstasy is harmful, showing that the government scientists used faulty research and that everything the scientists stated was worthless. Jennings wasn't doing much to hide that the government had consciously lied. He went on to say that the Say No to Drugs campaign only made more people try ecstasy, since most people don't believe the government. 1.8 million new people try ecstasy each year, and only marijuana is used by more people in the U.S. Then, go ahead.
I was just going to say, in the marijuana movement, which I'm involved in this conversation, we're specifically dealing with ending the war on drugs. We're interested in legalizing marijuana. We don't take a stand on the other drugs that are out there.
I thought this was pretty interesting, though. I mean, ecstasy was not against the law, and I took it twice when it was not illegal. And, some people think that. Probably listening, think it totally rotted my brain. But it's a wonderful experience. I'm not trying to, I would not encourage anyone, and I'm not encouraging anyone to do it. Everyone should make their own decision and be very aware that there are certain consequences to powerful substances.
One of the things Jack has to say is the nature of religion comes out of psychedelic plants. The war of psychedelia is the war against the evolution of human consciousness.
There you go.
You really should see the value in some of these drugs that have been out there that have been used psychotherapeutically, but they're just against the establishment.
Sure. And ecstasy, some people claim, has altered the nature of the youth of England, that because it does exactly what its name does, put you in a state of ecstasy for a few hours. And of course, here in the United States, it's used at these all-night dance parties called raves. So you feel this ecstatic state, and you want to dance all night. Only one thing to do, Marvin, call the cops. Right? Can't have people doing that.
What's so exciting in Ann Arbor is they have a $25 fine. People are actually enjoying themselves for marijuana. People, they don't go to jail for the rest of their life like we do everywhere else across the state. People are enjoying themselves. They're having house parties. They're smoking weed. They're not worried about the police busting down their doors. I thought when I was in Ann Arbor this weekend that I was actually back in Amsterdam. That's a sense of freedom I felt in Ann Arbor.
Huh.
So, and then Jack Harris told me that you can drive in the state of California with a joint in your hand and 3 pounds of weed in your trunk, and the police cannot bother you if you have a medical marijuana license, a medical marijuana permit.
But wait a minute, Marvin, and I'm not stuttering, folks. That is his name. I don't want anybody getting high and driving. I mean, that's driving while intoxicated, and that we have laws against that. I'm not opposed to that. Of course, I've had people say, well, man, I can just drive so much better when I'm stoned.
Actually, test tests have shown that people do drive better when they're stoned. There have been a couple tests. Drive slower because they're looking for the Burger King joint.
Because they got the munchies. Bad idea. Marvin, thanks for the report.
Let me plug one more time.
Go ahead.
If people want to get in touch with me or find out what's going on in the marijuana movement, partyparty.com. P-A-R-T-I-E, and then party the way it's regularly spelled, P-A-R-T-Y.com. We're going to be doing some things this summer. We're not going to miss out on this opportunity to get medical marijuana legalized in Detroit.
Well, party, Marvin, Marvin.
Thank you, sir.
All right. One of the pioneers in the Motor City. I actually, everybody under the sun or under this full moon, is it a full moon or almost a full moon? An intensely bright moon came up tonight. I'm a lunatic, so I really appreciated it. But I mentioned, and Shelby LaPree, who runs radiopower.org and repeats this broadcast, by the way. You can hear it all again, 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, and then sometime in the afternoon or the night. How come I don't know this? You go to my site, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. Anyways, Eric writes in from Minneapolis saying that Radio Power has a strong signal in Minneapolis. So, Shelby, what's the problem? The people listening on radiopower.org here at RI. Keep preaching the truth. I listen all the time. You and anyone who serves saves me from the right-wing radio monopoly. He says he's age 36, and by the way, I have a pal in Iraq my age. It's not just the kids. Yeah, you're right. All right, back to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
This is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, you got a really good show going tonight.
Thank you.
I like the way you're calling out the cons.
Okay.
Sounds good. I wouldn't say I'm a conservative or a liberal. I'm an independent, I'd say.
Good thing.
But I'm going to make a case for war.
Oh. Yeah, I should be playing in the background Edwin Starr's song, right? War. Oh, go ahead and make the case.
Okay. I would say Islamic fundamentalism, the practice, the kind practiced by Al-Qaeda, Islamic Jihad, Hamas, there's all kinds of groups like that. It's as fanatical as the Nazis were in Germany and as fanatical as the Japanese were. And the Japanese had their suicide bombers or kamikazes. And,
right.
You know, the way we defeated the Japanese, we dropped atomic bombs on them. And the way we defeated Nazi Germany was basically to level their cities.
Right. So you think we ought to do the same to, what, the entire Arab world?
Well, I would say, well, maybe start with Fallujah. But, you know, I would say...
Well, wait, you know, Fallujah because, well, actually, the killing of these armed mercenaries there that are called benignly called contractors here was part of warfare. I mean, that's not unusual. I mean, you don't have to wait to everybody get their gat out. The desecration of the bodies is pretty horrific and illustrated. You may be getting to the point where that there was such enthusiasm about doing such grotesque things to these dead bodies, including a 10-year-old kid who had his foot on the head, a severed head, talking about bringing on Bush. So these people that who we were bound and determined to save... Now we should commit mass murder to what? And then they say that during Vietnam. We had to destroy the city to save it.
Right, but I'd just like to say that the fact that they're fanatics, if we retreat, say, you know, they did knock down the Twin Towers.
Right. Well, the people in Fallujah didn't. The people of Iraq and the political leadership under the dictator Hussein had nothing to do with that. But what we've done is to expand the people that despise us. We probably encouraged more terrorism. In fact, we've now become the targets because think about this. If you call it terrorism as opposed to just warfare, they've now taken a toll of 610 American soldiers, 3,000 severely wounded, 15,000 more evacuated from Iraq. So it seems like we've gotten ourselves exactly where we don't want to be.
No, but I just want to kind of make this last point here. If
Go.
We completely retreat, and we completely just retreat, are they going to stop attacking?
Well, they didn't attack us. The Iraqis never attacked us. We attacked them with no legal basis whatsoever and no sensible basis whatsoever. If we're concerned about the people that that make up the basis of these attacks that are being planned, the government tells us we can expect attacks here in the United States during the summer, we're in the wrong country. That all happened out of people that were centered in Afghanistan. And now, of course, probably a lot of them have migrated to the next battle against the great Satan, us. Doesn't seem like a good idea.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Are you renting and ready to buy a new home? Listen to this. All you need is $500 down. Hello, this is Lawrence Allison, CEO and founder of Michigan's Community Builder, Bruce Building Company. Right now, you can own a brand new home in Canton or Auburn Hills with as little as $500 down. $500. Own a new home in Canton's Cherry Hill Village or Auburn Hills Forester Square with only $500 down and a monthly payment for less than you're likely paying in rent. Don't miss out on this limited-time offer. Visit the Bruce Building Company sales offices in Canton or Auburn Hills this weekend and move up to homeownership for as little as $500. We're even staffed with Rock Financial Mortgage experts Saturday and Sunday. If you're ready to own, you'll want to close the deal right away. $500 to own a new home. To learn more, visit our sales offices this weekend. For directions, go to our website at brucebuildingcompany.com or call 248-594-4445.
Bruce Building Company, the Michigan Community Builder, featuring James Hardy Siding. Limited time offer to qualified buyers. Visit our sales centers for complete details.
Men, how'd you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtrol is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtrol is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtrol, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtrol or call now and try Maxtrol risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtrol. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
Are you searching for the great fajita? Introducing Chili's sizzling new steak and portobello mushroom fajitas. Tender, juicy grilled steak topped with grilled marinated portobello mushrooms and then served with warm flour tortillas and a chimichurri sauce you can drizzle on for even more flavor. Chili's new steak and portobello mushroom fajitas are taking fajitas to a whole new level. Want more flavor in your life? Come to Chili's.
Sometimes I'm in the mood for a salad, and sometimes I'm in the mood for a meal. I go back and forth. Salad, meal, salad, meal, salad, meal. But then I heard about Chili's new boneless buffalo chicken salad. Fresh field greens, cool blue cheese crumbles, and big strips of chicken with all the flavor of Chili's famous boneless buffalo wings. It's like a salad and a meal. So now the only thing I have to worry about is whether to go for lunch or dinner. Lunch or dinner. Lunch or dinner. Try the new boneless buffalo chicken salad and all the other surprising salads at Chili's.
White Castle knows there are cravers everywhere. Here is one of their stories.
They call me the Deuce. The full name is the Deuce of Earl. That's because I like to double up on everything. When I buy a suit, I go for the double-breasted with two pair of pants. I like to double date, double down, and double dip.
Hey, Deuce, give me five.
Make it ten, you got yourself a deal, my friend.
Oh, you're the man, Deuce.
See what I mean? That's the way I roll. The Deuce doubles everything. When I go to White Castle, I order, what else? The doubles, every time. Double cheeseburgers, double bacon cheeseburgers, and kicking double jalapeno cheeseburgers. Sizzling 100% beef steam grilled on a bed of tasty onions, then doubled up with twice the cheese. Oh, the Deuce loves them. When it comes to flavor, these White Castles are working a double shift. So get your 2 feet over to White Castle. And by the way, For you ladies out there who are wondering, the Deuce is still single.
White Castle. What you crave.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
Thanks a lot. Welcome back. Talking about the mass uprising in Iraq Sunday that's left 10 Americans dead and also perhaps 30 wounded. And I don't know if I can quickly find this email. I've got so many here. It's, I don't know. Because the person... Okay, I can't get it right away, but they said that there's been 3,000 Americans that have been severely wounded. Total of 18,000 Americans who have been evacuated from Iraq for medical reasons. And of that 3,000, none of them are ever added to the total that have died. In other words, they've all recovered. Now, I'm actually sorry I got into this. This was a caller a little while ago. They called from the Union, the SEIU, the, what is it, all of a sudden, Service Employees International Union, SEIU, and he wanted us to call the airport authority to tell them to stop eliminating union jobs. And I said they have my full support. A union employee of the airport authority writes in, I work under airport authority. And I'm sorry now. I mean, this is probably going to be difficult to for people to comprehend. I work under airport authority, so why am I reading it, you're wondering? Well, I feel kind of the obligation, because it's a union employee, says the other way around. So I feel I need to set a few things straight. He mentioned working at the Northwest Terminal, meaning he works for the company Kimco. When Kimco started in mid-March, I was told by one of the higher-ups in the company that he said the workers could form a union after 90 days on the job. It has not been 90 days yet. Kimco has both union and non-union accounts, depending on what the workers at that account wants. Also, when it comes to the new Northwest Terminal, Airport Authority has little to do about that. As you may or may not know, the Northwest Terminal is run by Johnson Control, which actually has recently been organized by the UAW. Before you sound off on the radio, maybe you should know your facts a bit better. Well, I'm not even sure what that contradicted, but I don't think I'm going to take any more calls, or you can send me some email on this at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And I will look into it further. I'm not disparaging either the caller or the letter writer. All right, let me just quickly, we were talking too about whether a draft will be instituted. And this is from one of these threads at democraticunderground.com. Also, there are no plans to reinstate the draft. No, they're just exercises and $28 million extra to get the whole selective service ready and open for business by June 15th, 2005. Now, this is in fact the case. Read the official budget carefully and you'll see that Bush is gearing up the draft. There's no longer any doubt about it. Selective Service must report to Bush on March 31st, 2005 that the system is ready for activation within 75 days. So on June 15th, 2005, expect the announcement that the first draft lottery since Vietnam will be held for 20-year-olds. I don't know whether that's the case or not. But the writer at democraticunderground.com is absolutely correct that there's millions of dollars, $28 million has been set aside and is in motion to create a mechanism for reinstituting the draft within 75 days. Not going to happen before the 2004 election. Hi, this is WRIF and you're on the air. Good evening.
Well, hello, this is Peter Werby.
It is me, hi.
All right, good to talk to you again, Pete. Great show.
Thank you.
This is Glenn calling from Windsor. And, I don't usually hear too many people mentioning about Canada or calling in from Canada on your show. But I'd like to thank either it was you or one of your callers that mentioned the Canadians in Afghanistan. We are doing a very good job there. What about... What do you think there, Pete?
Well, I don't know. Again, it's one of those situations that it seems more like a trap than something you could either say a good job or a bad job. There's not enough Canadian or American troops or other U.S. allies to actually pacify the country. In fact, it's almost impossible to without a major invasion, because the root of the problem there are the warlords that were the allies of the United States in the war against the Taliban. And these were actually the bad characters that that the United States had quietly let get thrown out at the beginning of the 90s and the Taliban get in. So it's a revolving door. The United States, the Canadians control next to nothing outside of Kabul.
That's right.
Yeah.
And like, my point is, I heard earlier, is like it's like men with guns. And the same thing's going on in Iraq, but, you know, it's tenfold. I wish my country was involved. You know, God bless all the families, but I wish my country was more involved in Iraq.
Why?
Well, I feel it's a very just war.
Just? How yes. can you figure that?
Well, you know, if somebody wants to, you know, slam planes into our buildings.
Wait. Iraq didn't have anything to do with September 11th. No one, I mean, you're suffering under a severe misinformation. Even Bush said
right.
that.
But it's the rhetoric. They teach that rhetoric. The same thing's going on in Palestine with the Palestinians. It's the rhetoric.
Yeah.
You know, instead of counting beads, they're counting bullets, like, you know, against the Americans, against the West.
Well, you know, they've got some grievances. The way they carry them out and the basic underlying philosophy is about 180-degree opposite from me. But, you know... They refer Al Qaeda as the center, and I think the whole name of it is like the center against the Crusaders and the Jews. Forget about the last part. The Crusaders were Europeans who invaded the Middle East, and what they see the Israelis, although it's probably maybe even more than 50% non-European Jews there now, but particularly the United States and the way it aids repressive regimes like Saudi Arabia, and what they see is the way the United States aiding Israel and the way it's invaded and occupying and now getting ready to carry out military exercises against a city like Fallujah, that we're the return of the Crusaders. So don't you think that a better way would be to figure out how, twofold, how do we make peace? How do we make peace with people that have an unrelenting hatred for us and for sort of the underlying institutions that we take for granted? Well, the first thing to do would be to get out of their face and to get out of their business. Now, I don't think that would necessarily, I mean, that would go a long way towards ending the hostility, but they may not. I mean, they may just see us as the great Satan, just as we see them as the great Satan, and they may continue to launch attacks. Well, that has to be done by taking this fortune that we're wasting in this fool's errand of the occupation of Iraq and using it the way the Europeans have for the last, I don't know how many years, to deflect terrorism to the extent that they've been able to. And that's in police work. That's in creating security systems and intelligence systems that tracks down these people that are going to carry out attacks on civilians and stop them. More wars will only increase terrorism. You got my word. Glenn, thanks for making the program international. I appreciate it. Actually, I just had somebody else say they were listening in Windsor, and the program sounds fine because we were talking about the sound quality. Hopefully, everyone in Windsor is listening to it on WRIF, these radio waves recognize no boundaries. Adam writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. A few questions. Are we the only ones in Iraq? No. There, a Salvadoran troop got killed today, and the coalition of the willing, you know, who mostly see this as an investment, whereas they're going to either get cut in on the racket or the United States has said, look, you want to be our pals, you got to send a few troops. If so, then why don't we pull out and let the UN in? Well, because the whole idea of invading Iraq, because there really was no reason to do it whatsoever, was to create a U.S. control, particularly U.S. corporate control and domination of Iraq, and also to have it as a base, military base, for operations in that region. So the Crusaders continue on both an economic and military and philosophical basis, only increasing the possibility of more losses and never resolving the problems that are outstanding. Let's see. Putnick writes in, said, it's good to hear you again. I was one of your listeners when you broadcast on the IE America radio network. I must tell you, I may well have to twist my own arm in addition to holding my nose to vote for Kerry, but the shrub must go. However, assuming Kerry becomes president, we must all hold his feet to the fire to keep him on the straight and narrow, and I don't mean the Skull and Bones version. I agree. Skull and Bones is the secret society that both Kerry and Bush belong to. Rich Guys Club. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. My name is Harry. I'm the one who sent you the Democratic Underground link.
Oh, good.
As you can see, Bush is preparing the draft for next year, and you can read all that information at the Selective Services website. And it's right off their homepage.
Yeah.
For the performance plan for 2004. But I've got other good news for right now coming out of Iraq. Al Jazeera is reporting that the Shia group that did the protest today issued a statement calling on supporters to end their protest but to declare jihad and take up arms against occupation forces.
Wonderful.
That's bad news for us.
Yeah.
This is the group we needed to win over, and now they're declaring jihad, and that's probably the worst thing that could happen.
Well, you know, somebody said to me a couple times even on this broadcast, he said, well, what's your solution? And, I said to him, sometimes people, individuals, make such poor choices, have committed acts that make a simple solution or an easy solution or even a good solution impossible. I mean, there are certain times when you in one's own life, and certainly in the life of a nation. Well, I mean, think about, and I'm not trying to make a comparison, but let's get a little. I don't want to do it like this; it'll sound too bad. But Germany decides in World War I to invade France and Belgium. Well, it seemed like a good idea, right? It wound up pretty bad for them. Same thing here, or even our own decision to invade Vietnam. Look at the consequences of that. So turn it over to the UN. I don't know that the Shia group would act any differently towards them.
Well, we told that's what's crazy about it. The U.S. told the UN to kiss off pretty much, and we're going to take care of business ourselves, and now we're going to be begging the UN to come in there?
Yeah.
I don't see how the UN is going to go for that.
I don't either. I think it's just an awful situation, and this is laid at the feet of George Bush. That's what we got to keep remembering. Thank you, Harry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I could see how people would say, well, the Iraq idea, if everything was true about WMDs and everything else with Iraq, I could see how people would make a case for it. If all of it was true, it was all a big lie.
Well, hey, wait a minute. Let me go back to one thing. Since you are, at least are a reader, as I am, of democraticunderground.com, notice none of the cons, the conservative, none of the cons have called up to tell us what conservatives have done in a positive manner for this country. I mean, they've opposed every historical movement for the extension of democracy and people's rights and better wages and extending the vote and ending they oppose ending segregation, they oppose ending slavery. I mean, come on, let's not just make fun of them. Isn't there one thing that they've done that they can be proud of?
Well, they want to take us backwards now. They don't even want to go forwards.
No. Come on. You're thinking. Let's try to think positively about them.
Positively.
I mean, haven't they done one thing? Well, I'll keep thinking. Thank you, Harry.
Thank you.
I appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Here was the call. I'm losing my mind. Rick Fox, in this little unsophisticated system we have here, he just, for the line, he flashes his finger. So he was showing line two, and I was giving him the peace sign back. He meant line two. And if you're just joining us in this hour, Rick Fox, who's been a stalwart of the broadcast as producer and phone screener for how long? A while, he says. We never keep track of these things. But a big thank you. This is his last week here, and we'll introduce you to our new producer next week. Lawrence from Dearborn wrote into calltalk@yahoo.com. Oh, this is, yeah, Now, this is the letter I was trying to remember. The idea is starting to get around that the American body count is low by perhaps 50% because the only people counted are the ones who were killed outright. The wounded all seem to have a 100% recovery. This is of American GIs. If a soldier barely survives an attack, he or she will never die later in the hospital, according to that logic. Can we get one more letter in here? Ooh, that's a long one. Shorter are better. I keep getting long ones. Oh, yeah. Pierre says, sounds great in Windsor. That's what I was talking about. Hopefully, you're listening on WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
All right. Hey, Peter.
Hi.
How you doing?
Doing well. Who's this?
This is Mark from Brighton.
Hi, Mark.
You're a very, very educated man, and it's a very good show.
Thank you.
People just don't seem to understand that. Who's the gang? Is it going to be, is this just a grudge match between, father and son? The son's going to finish off what the father started? Or, this conflict is always going to go on. It seems like there's a never-ending, it seems like it's a never-ending battle.
Yeah. Well, I guess, it's like, I've had friends of mine, a guy has kind of like a cut on his forehead, and I said, what happened to you, man? He says, I was down in this bar, and he told me the area, and he said, got in a fight. And I said, damn. He said, I get in a fight every time I go down there.
Yeah.
So one of the things we ought to do is not go where people want to fight us. I mean, we're big enough, strong enough, have enough resources, should be able to develop intelligence and security systems that we don't have to bring our people directly in the line of fire. That ought to be like for openers. And we ought to take this money that we're wasting, first destroying Iraq and then rebuilding Iraq, and use it first for our purposes, but also increase that security and intelligence so we do what we can to never have to experience what we did on September 11th.
Well, see, the thing is it's like, I think that Bush should fake out Iraq and say, hey, this little money is going to go to you. Hey, you know what? It's going to come back to us.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm a union guy, too. I'm a union Mason. And I see my friends and my, just losing everything because we're paying out this much money to protect somebody that doesn't even want to be protected.
I guess not.
And I think it should be for us.
Well, it ought to start here. I think if there was an altruistic, that is actually, an act committed without desire of return, but actually wanting to help the Iraqi people restore their country from the damage that's been done there over the last 14 or 15 years, and without any strings attached, and without having somebody like Bremer, who essentially is the ruler of Iraq. There would be a much, much different reception. But I think it's pretty clear to Iraqis that that's not our intent, that we have our own goals there. I shouldn't say we. It's not like the majority of the American people, but the wealthy class and the corporations that Bush represents directly, in fact, because he's directly part of that, has an agenda that has nothing to do with the good of the people of Iraq and certainly nothing good to do with the people of the United States.
Well, yeah, and we just showed up. It's not like they asked us to be there. We just showed up, and now we're going to give them money?
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't make a bit of sense.
No,
thanks, Mark. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Garrett says, hey, Peter, could you tell me where again you saw that draft reinstatement in 2005? I heard Democratic Underground, but I can't find it. It's democraticunderground.com. I was wondering if you had a link. The link is pretty long. And do a Google search. Just do reinstatement draft 2005. I bet it'll come up. If not, write me back, Garrett, and we'll try another way, or I'll send it to you later. Man, all right. We're asking the conservatives, is there anything they ever did positive for America? They opposed every single, they support every war. They're war mongers. You know, they're always trying to get us into war. You know, going back, things like the, I mean, even the Mexican War, 1858, was it? I'm forgetting my dates. Yeah. Let's see. All right. I got to write this down because I want to write, maybe this is something. What is that? Okay, this is thanks for the show. Farewell, Rick, writes Tigger, and talking about what has the conservatives contributed? Manifest Destiny, remember that thing that we ought to be able to go all across the this nation, forgetting about that, you know, good sections of it were where Native people and Mexicans lived, and then. In fact, part of the Manifest Destiny, people wanted to go into Central America as well, but that's been broadened into the United States has the right to go anywhere at any time of its choosing, which was one of the many reasons for the war in Iraq. Wanted to reemphasize that there are no laws, no nothing that can stop the United States under George Bush from doing anything it wants at any time. And it could be pretty interesting because, you know, the United Nations or its allies or, you know, U.S. allies couldn't stop the United States. But maybe it'll just be the common people of Iraq that will do it. And the toll will be so disheartening. I need a better word than disheartening. Will be so grotesque. Anyways, he says, Manifest Destiny. He says, I hate the Internet. There's no way to show tone of voice, which means he's being totally sarcastic, right? So what have the cons contributed? Zero. Except getting us involved in wars, stuff like that. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Doing well.
This is TJ from Warren.
Welcome.
Let's see. I got two quick points. One is about Saddam Hussein. Well, let's see. I just was curious, and you probably couldn't even answer this question anyway. So we captured Saddam Hussein back in December, and it is now April, and I was just kind of wondering, what's going on? We know he's in captivity, obviously, but I'll assume that they'll probably put him under some tribunal for war crimes and
yeah, they're
stuff
actually,
like that.
They're one of the things that your tax dollars, are you working? Okay, and your tax dollars goes is that we have sent over about 60 Justice Department, because there's no crime in the United States, consultants or whatever, to set up the basis for a war crimes trial. And, you know, well, there should be. This man has committed some awful crimes. And he now has a French lawyer who has represented other high-profile nasty guys like Klaus Barbie, the butcher of Lyon, who was a Nazi. So he's going to represent Saddam Hussein. And this is going to be interesting. One of his defenses is going to be that everything that Saddam Hussein did was with the complicity of the United States. Because the United States armed him, the United States gave him intelligence, the United States said that it was okay that after he gassed the Kurds, the United States, according to most accounts, say that when the ambassador to Iraq, April Gillespie, in 1990 was told by Saddam Hussein that he was going to move into Kuwait, that April Gillespie said, we don't have any interest in the question, essentially giving the go-ahead. So that's going to be his defense. I almost will be surprised, given the direct links between people in the Reagan and the Bush 1 administrations, whether old Saddam will ever make it to trial.
Well, you know what? I find it very interesting that I have to call a talk show host on a radio at 12:30 in the morning to find out exactly what's going on with Saddam Hussein, when you think I could just turn on so many cable channels of news media to find out the latest of what's going to happen or what they plan on doing. I find that pretty amazing that I have to stay up late at night and call Peter Werby to find out what's going on.
Well, TJ, here's the thing, and that's why I say I never bother to watch television. Although this show is completely about politics and what have you, I mean, I do have a life. I mean, I do other things, and I have other interests, and sometimes I do nothing and goof off and do mindless activities, which are good for the mind. I think. And yet, so what I do, I spend the time, like now, mostly going on the internet. And so what I just said, it's not, you know, I don't have any special sources, as I usually say. This is available from the New York Times online, which is nytimes.com. And that's a pretty mainstream paper. It has a lot of BS in it as well. I'll tell you, and this is not just to promote my website, because I don't get anything out of people going to it. There are sources on there. If you go into the top right-hand corner of it, it's peterwerbe.com, which is W-E-R-B-E.com. And
I check your website every day.
Okay. Well, then you know. I'll tell you. Here's what I do. I mean, I do get the New York Times delivered, so I'm not staring at a screen all the time, and I read that every morning. I read buzzflash.com. I read commondreams.org. I read the Yahoo News. And I go to some of the links, and commondreams.org. I said that. Yeah, so I don't, sometimes people send, check these 30 websites. I go, whoa, man. I don't have the time for that. Hey, you know, I saw a good one. Let me see. I don't have my site up. Let me see if I can. There's I can't remember the name of it. I should find it because I wanted to recommend it to people. It's an astounding site, particularly about 911. If you go to it's something like the questions never answered about 911, right up at the top now, and that takes you to this website that is absolutely phenomenal in terms of information.
Wow.
All right, TJ.
Yes. Well, I appreciate your show, and I hope you stay on forever.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. You have a good morning. Now, let me see. What? This says radiopower.org. This is Debbie again from Boston. Radiopower.org reruns the show 9 a.m. Monday and 3 a.m. Tuesday. And the full moon is tomorrow. Huh. I thought it was some. All right, maybe Shelby has changed it. But anyway, you can go to radiopower.org and check it out, or go to my site and check it out as well. Let me see. Oh, my God. It says your mail storage limit warning. People are rolling over. Let me see. These are just. Case writes in, we can't catch Osama yet. We have to leave him on the loose for the third generation Bush regime. How do they get funding for an election without a gold mine like Afghanistan to rebuild for their corporate buddies? I mean, I hope I don't want to read that again, but you get it all. The third generation Bush regime, that's when Michael Corleone comes to power. That's Jeb. Right now, we have, of course, Fredo.
Believe me, yeah, being married is the only plus in my categories. Believe me, it's nice. This is in a sea of minus.
But you
signs.
Can't take the 3 years when you do none of the things that married people get the points for.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1
WRIF. Ow, you're shouting at me.
Riff.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor in Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com. It's 5 o'clock. It's time to rock with the Riff.
Weekday afternoons at 5, right here on 101 WRIF.
Your ride home rocks.
Podcast with Big Daddy Arthur P. Playing your riff rockin' requests. Call in your riff rockin' request to the Grand Poobah at 313-298-WRIF.
Email them to arthurp@wrif.com.
Hell, you can even fax them in before you ditch the office at 248-398-6219. Call for the tunes that you want to hear. Win yourself some killer riff swag and let the ride home rock with the riff's own Big Daddy Arthur Penhalla.
The Riff is the only station letting you pick your favorites and program the station three times a day at noon, 5, and 9.
It's your all-request Riff Rock and Ride Home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll,
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rock.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with the Red Wings' Manny Legacy about the tough job of being a goalie in the NHL in Detroit, of all places.
Have you ever experienced that situation where you give up a couple soft goals and then you make that real easy save, that floater from 60 feet, and you get that sarcastic applause?
Yeah. That was my second year here. I let in two bad goals in the first period, but you know, and they were booing, and we were losing 2-0, and they did that, you know, the shot from the red line, they're all like, you know, screaming, and then this is all in the first period, right?
Yeah.
So we come into the third, we're up 3-2 now.
Yep.
I make two big saves, now they're chanting my name. You know? And I'm like, oh, God, you guys are awful.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. 101-101. WRRF. Riff. Rocks.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Antonio's Cucina Italiana, with three locations in Farmington Hills, Dearborn Heights, and Dearborn.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit
at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche, put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll.
At WRIF.com.
$28 million has been added to the 2004 Selective Service System budget to prepare for a military draft that could start as early as June 15, 2005. The Selective Service System must report to Bush on March 31st, 2005, that the system, which has been dormant for decades, is ready for activation. And you can go to, you'll never get this, too long. But anyway, long website to view the annual performance plan, fiscal year 2004. So there is a draft in your future. So I would add to the questions, to the cons, to the conservatives, the several things that we had previously said. One, how many more deaths of American soldiers? We know you don't care about Iraqis at all. How many more deaths of U.S. soldiers are you willing to, I would just say it, support or allow or countenance before it's too many? 610 now, 3,000 have been severely wounded. There's got to be plenty that have died as a result of their wounds. How much more in tax dollars are you willing to give over to this fool's errand there, or to the effort to liberate Iraq, however you want to call it, when there's so many needs here at home? How much more terrorism, if any, do you think this will inspire? And the other thing is, what have conservatives done, if anything, to aid the expansion of democracy in this country, in that cons opposed the American Revolution, supported slavery, segregation, opposed women's right to vote, supported every war, even the useless power grabs, land grabs, and all that, against the union movement, against the civil rights movement, against the women's movement, everything. So we're trying to figure out, it's got to be one thing that the cons have done for this country. I can't think of a one, but I just think it's probably my history is bad or something like that. All right, okay, we're going to line six. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter Werby.
Hi.
Hey, this is Russ, longtime listener from the IE America, Peter Werby, Jolene Jordan days.
Oh, yeah, where from?
Santa Cruz.
Well, welcome, Russ, yeah. How
are
you? My
old pal Billy calls in once in a while.
He does. That's great. Good to hear from you.
You know, I kind of look at, and I've been pondering this, and I kind of look at the Iraq situation. It's a lot like the Israel-Palestine thing, where you have conservatives on both sides. You have right-wing, like religious fundamentalist right-wingers attacking each other.
That's right.
And I don't see, like the thing in Fallujah, it wasn't like peace-loving liberals that were hanging bodies from the bridge.
Yeah.
These guys are extremists.
Liberals don't do things like that.
And I see the extremists in the Bush administration, and I see extremists in Iraq killing people. And so I'm not sure what the solution is, but I think, like, when India was fighting Britain, and you had Gandhi come out and say, you know, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
Sure.
And he came out with peaceful solutions. And I think, you know, gathering the world in an international type of peace coalition and finding other solutions than the cycle of violence. Because, you know, it was like after the Fallujah killings, the Bush administration came out and says, we need to go kill those guys. So we have this cycle of war, and it's just we stoop down to the terrorist level when we bomb and kill just like they do.
Well, you know, Russ, I don't know if you were listening earlier, but I was saying that how now is that the American troops there, that many who probably went over there with the idea, with some idealism, now must just be seething with hatred for the people they were supposed to be, quote, liberating. And I mentioned these tanks that have been going through, U.S. tanks going through Baghdad with things written on their the barrels of these big guns, like, kill them all. And you know what, Russ? If you and I were there, I mean, maybe not, but more than likely, if you and I were there and we had seen people in our unit killed, wounded severely, knew that it was just a matter of a few millimeters that it wasn't you or me, we'd probably be seething with that same hatred. And that's what happens in warfare. The others, you know, it becomes very personal. It's not about weapons of mass destruction. It's not about liberating anybody. It's about making sure that you and your comrades do not become statistics and doing as much damage to the other side. And so that's what becomes of all people involved in even the best of wars, I'm sure.
Yeah, I just think the heavy-handed bully tactics of, like, Bush and Sharon just aren't working, and we need regime change in both governments.
Well, thank you, Russ, and it's a pleasure to get your opinion.
Peter Werby, I love you, man.
Thank you, tell some of our other old friends out in Santa Cruz to call in to here to Detroit.
Keep it up, buddy.
All right, I will. Thank you so much. That's great. If you don't know the story of that, actually, you can go to my website, peterwerby.com, and go to On the Air. It'll tell you the whole deal. The whole sad story of the IE America Radio Network. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Tommy Kay. I'm out of Garden City, Michigan, and a longtime listener, first-time caller. I'd like to switch the record to the Patriot Act and the Homeland Front, if I may.
Sure.
You mentioned about the concentration camps during World War II and Japs. The executive orders of the President of the United States is pretty extreme. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Senate Resolution 21, which was a bill passed in 1975 for the Federal Emergency Management Administration of FEMA.
Sure.
And that was passed for resistors and people foreign and domestic threats. Now, with Dearborn, Michigan, I'm not certain. It's the largest Arab population in the United States. Could that be a threat, since it's so close to Canada, harboring terrorists there, and also here in Michigan? Is that an issue which is bound to be confronted yet?
Well, I don't know. I mean, friends of mine in the Arab community that live over there are worried about how they, like the Japanese, were, you know, seen as a threat. I mean, who knows what would happen if there, and I can only bring myself to say if there's another major terrorist attack. People will generalize about people, and it's always come about with dreadful consequences throughout history.
On the heels of that statement, martial law was banned illegal during the Civil War by the Supreme Court of the U.S., but on the same statement, could that be initiated if another mistake would happen in this country with civil liberties?
Well, I'll tell you, Tommy Franks, who led the invasion of Iraq, he was interviewed in Cigar Aficionado magazine, and someone asked him, the interviewer asked him, what would be the consequences of another terrorist attack? And he said, if there is a major terrorist attack in the United States, that it could, and get his language, he said, they could possibly end our experiment with democracy.
I agree 110% with your data on that, and I thank you for your time and consideration, sir.
Thank you, Tommy. Thanks for joining us on Night Call. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Pierre writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We were talking about, do the cons have any positive contribution to American society? Peter, I hate to attribute anything positive to the cons, but if my U.S. history is up to par, wasn't Lincoln not a Republican, or in fact a Republican? Emancipation through war, of course. Will you forgive me if I'm mistaken about Lincoln being a Republican, but after all, I'm a liberal Canuck cheese-eating surrender monkey. Oh, Pierre is is from Canada. Well, I chose my words carefully. Lincoln was not a conservative. Just like the Democrats in the South who supported segregation and slavery were not, they were conservatives. They were the Democratic Party, but they were extraordinary conservatives. So it's not a matter of party. Both parties have had arch conservatives, but now there's no middle. Now there's a little bit of a middle left in the East and the Northeast of moderate Republicans, and the party's trying to get rid of them big time. There's a big effort to get rid of Arlen Specter, who is a conservative, but he's not far right-wing enough for the wackos that now control the party. So, moving onward. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, my name's John. I'm calling from right here in Detroit.
Hi, John.
Hi. Your first caller was low, but every caller since then has been just fine.
Oh, okay. Good.
And the reason I called tonight was because of a segment I saw on a program on public television today called Now with Bill Moyers.
Oh, yeah.
And his main segment was about how Bush and the military establishment and all of the conservatives are pushing to restart nuclear testing. And they've also made it so that they can start to develop low-yield nuclear weapons.
Yeah, Bush is the most dangerous man in the entire world, and has been since he stole the election from Al Gore.
And the reasoning behind this is they're saying that if they have this, and they can show people like Bin Laden and outlaw regimes that they can strike at what they hold dear, then they won't attack us, which is completely false, because look at what they say on the news and what have you about they could attack with a dirty bomb or what have you,
mm-hmm.
which is basically what a low yield is.
Well, they said they have to develop what they call these bunker busters, but it's just the desire, you know, boys with bigger toys, because it's not like these tactical battlefield weapons could have done anything more against Osama bin Laden. And I mean, what are they going to hold hostage? The Osama bin Laden types probably oppose every single government on earth, every Islamic country. I'm trying to just think if there's anybody they would support. They supported the Taliban, but that was about it.
Exactly. They even had the bunker busters. They called it a deep earth penetrator.
Right.
And they had three guys on there. One was they talked to three different people who said that it's the one that they tested in the first Gulf War, which wasn't nuclear armed, which is what Bush wants to make his. It would be lucky if it got 10 meters into the soil.
Hmm.
And the three that they interviewed was, I forget his name, he was the general of Air Command during the first Gulf War, and then a retired admiral, and one of the guys who was head of the nuclear development site in New Mexico.
Boy. Well, let me just back up to one thing, John, and why I said that George W. Bush is the most dangerous man in the world. And Russia is heavily armed with nuclear weapons. Their security is very poor. Putin wanted to create a treaty that would have virtually disarmed both of the countries. I mean, we would have been left with, instead of, I forgot what we, I can't remember the figure, somewhere between 7 and 10,000 weapons. Well, probably 10 of them could destroy either country. Bush and the crazies that stole the election and now run things want to maintain this enormous U.S. nuclear arsenal. We had the opportunity to denuclearize the world, to begin that process of total and absolute nuclear disarmament. Right now, the Soviet Union is armed to the teeth with nuclear weapons. In a matter of, I think just a few switches, if not a matter of hours, Russia could retarget all of our cities, including Detroit. And why would they do that? Well, right now, if you, in these little obscure notices with all these new countries brought into the into NATO, including former Soviet bloc countries and former countries that were constituent nations of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, that they said that they feel that NATO has the potential to be an enemy of Russia. This is how they view the potential of NATO. So, I mean, why is the United States even putting together this huge coalition? They're wondering. The other thing is, what happens if there is a severe regime change in Russia? What happens if some of these nutball, far-right-wing fascists that hate the United States and think that Europe should be aligned against America and the Jews, as they put it, what happens if these nutballs get into power in Russia and all they have to do is click a few switches and suddenly we're under nuclear threat again? This is what George W. Bush, I mean, you know, he's a sock puppet. He's, you know, his head is as devoid of ideas as one could possibly imagine. But the characters around him are all Dr. Strangeloves from that 1960s movies, and they are an enormous threat to the security of the world. In fact, I would say George W. Bush is more of a threat to the world than Osama bin Laden and everything that these small but deadly groups could bring about. Because think about the horrific damage they've done on September 11th and in Madrid and what have you. George W. Bush has allowed the maintenance of a world nuclear system that could destroy millions, all because of their insane power schemes.
Right. Basically, it's a return to the Cold War mentality.
Yep. All right, John, I've got to take another call or so. Thank you for joining us. Hi, it's WRIF. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Peter? It's Mike from Warren.
Hi, Mike.
Aren't the Russians decommissioning their warheads and have been doing that for the past 10 or 12 years or
so? They've been decommissioning them, but they're not destroying them. I mean, they could be recommissioned on pretty quickly.
Yeah, but don't we have people over there, our people, American people, expecting the stuff as they are doing with us?
I'm not sure if that is happening or not.
Oh, you're not sure. Okay, and another thing, what one thing Republicans are doing good, what about Reagan and knocking down the wall and stuff like that?
Well, I'm not sure that Reagan did that. Why do you think? That's what Reagan likes to, and these people that want to, kind of attribute everything under the sun. I mean, the Soviet Union was collapsing. One of the things that the CIA was criticized for was not anticipating that the Soviet Union was beginning to implode on itself.
Okay, now, wasn't like Reagan and the Pope doing something in Poland before all this communism starting to fall? Like giving them printing presses and stuff like that to get the word of freedom out?
No, I did that, too, as a matter of fact. A bunch of us were contributing to Polish opposition figures during that late 80s there. So maybe I should get the credit.
Okay, and somebody else stole my thunder about Lincoln being a Republican, but isn't conservatism and Republicans both cut from the same cloth? Just like liberals and Democrats are both...
No, you think all these Southern Democrats that supported segregation?
Yeah, but they're Democrats, not Republicans. And you said that.
No, I said that I was talking about conservatives. I wasn't talking about party because there were arch conservative Democrats, and most of the Republicans have been arch conservatives. I said, and sometimes there wasn't even some of this was before the Republican Party. I mean, the conservatives in America, in the colonies, opposed the American Revolution, and then when there was an attempt to extend the franchise, the vote, beyond white-propertied males, they opposed that as well. They also opposed the ending of slavery.
They were called loyalists, and they were English. They were English people, and they were loyalists. I don't think they were called conservatives.
Well, I don't. But they were very conservative. No, they weren't called conservatives at all. They were called loyalists, but they were the conservatives of the era.
Yeah, but isn't that what you say?
Well, of course, it's what I say, as opposed to what? What do you think? I don't. I'm not like George Bush. I don't. You know, God does not speak through me.
Sure.
What?
Not. I said far from it.
Yeah. Right. No. Well. No. Do you think? Do you think that there are people who God speaks through?
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
if they are, they're probably crazy people.
I agree. All right, Mike. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Do we got another one? All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. It's my pleasure to be the last caller. This is Alan from Detroit.
Hi, Alan.
And how old are you?
What's your next question?
Okay. I know. I love your sardonic nature. The older I get, the more I understand you.
By the way, I always say younger than Arthur Penhallow.
Okay. Well, I must be young because I don't know who that is. Oh, okay. Arthur Penhallow. Oh, okay. With the WRIF, right?
Baby.
David.
Yeah.
All right. So, March... bloodiest, most violent month since September 2001 due to Islamic terrorists. Did you hear this?
Well, it certainly seems the case, eh?
Yeah, no, statistically, yeah. It's did you actually get to see the footage of the Fallujah stuff? Because they won't show it on any of the...
No, I actually opened up the New York Times. I went out and picked it up out of my drive, and there were these hideous, I mean, I just slammed it shut. I mean, I'm thinking, I do not want to see this. And in fact, it's one of the things we probably should have talked about tonight was whether it was appropriate to show those images.
And your take is that it's not?
Well, I don't know. It's not, I don't need to see it, but maybe people that think it's a grand idea to continue for us to be over there ought to see it.
Exactly. There shouldn't be censorship. If we're going to be doing this, we need to see it.
I guess you're right. I guess I didn't want to see it. Actually, my wife no longer will even read the front section of the paper.
Yeah.
It's all too horrific.
It's too horrific. I used to hate the local news, and now...
I don't read those worthless rags that come out of Detroit.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about zero value for information.
Yeah, you know, people should really go on the New York Times website. You got to register, but
yeah,
they don't do anything. And it's like It's a good option.
I was on a panel. I mentioned this last week, so it must have been 2 weeks ago. A week? No, it was a week ago. A week ago Friday, I was on a panel with this far-right-wing editor of the Detroit News editorial page, and I was just raving on about what a rag it was and worthless, and you know, naturally he took umbrage. And I said, but wait a minute, I can prove it. You know, like the guy before said, oh, it's just what I'm saying. Well, of course, it's always what I'm saying. But I said, there's not a single person in this room who's at the Wayne State Law School. There's not a single person in this room that when a major event occurred in our country, a thinking person, that would say, oh, I got to go get the Detroit News because I'll find out exactly what's happening.
Right.
Yeah. You are my last caller. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks to all of you for listening and for calling, those of you listening around the country and around the world as well. One final time, Rick Fox, thank you for your contribution to this broadcast. It's Rick's last night. We'll have another producer and phone screener next week who actually works with Motor City Riffs, the program that precedes this, so he won't be a stranger to at least the Detroit people. But stay tuned. Got a couple of interesting interviews for you, and we'll do this all again next week.
King Henry, why are you looking so sad?
My fourth wife is making my life miserable. I was thinking of having her beheaded like I did the others, but these new women's rights groups are giving me a very hard time.
Today, there's a better way to end your marriage. Simply call Adam. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. Let Adam take the misery out of your divorce while they protect the rights of men.
Your Highness, the Queen requests an audience with you.
Okay, show her in.
Hello, Henry, my dear. I understand you've hired Adam to handle your divorce.
That's right.
Well, why don't you come up to my chamber tonight and perhaps we could bury the hatchet,
You don't have to lose your home, your children, or your money in a divorce. Call Adam, the American Divorce Association for Men. They answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call 248-356-ADAM.
You've waited long enough, sitting at your desk planning your approach. You know things would be so hot, so fast, so rock and roll, so much better than it is now. You just need that one thing and your life would be complete. You know you're not happy. Stop sitting there and make your move. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts is exactly the next move you need to make to turn those dreams into reality. Hey, this is Creighton Scott Randall from The Rip, and I've got the greatest job in the world because I give Specs a call. Before radio, I was right where you are now. Fast food, telemarketing, data entry. All I needed was a little courage to make the move that would change my life for good. And the spring fling is all you can handle now. No worries, my friend. Call Specs Howard at 248-358-9000 by April 30th to set up a date. Take a tour of the school and check things out. There's zero commitment. Specs doesn't need to send you flowers or candy in the morning. This is your life. Do you really want to spend another unfulfilling year handing out tacos, sweeping the floor, or getting some dude a cup of coffee? No! Don't wait. Spring classes are forming now. And of course, morning, afternoon, and evening options are available. Call 248-358-9000 today. That's 248-358-9000 for the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield. This is where you start. It's where I started.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want, and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
The days are getting longer, and that means we have more time to go RVing. Hi, Christine Michael here for Walt Michaels RV Center in Belleville. Come and see us during our Daylight Savings Time sale and save big on a 38-foot Coachman Shasta Oasis travel trailer with dual bedrooms. It comfortably sleeps 10, so you have enough room for two families, and heck, you can even bring the neighbor kids too if you want. It's only $17,999. Or get out and tour America in Fleetwood's flagship, the 37-foot Pace Arrow, with dual slide-outs for as low as $179 a month with 20% down, 7% financing for 240 months. Hurry in our Daylight Savings Time sale ends this Saturday, April 10th. Come and see us. We're on the I-94 Service Drive in Belleville, also known as the Walt Michaels RV Mile. Or give us a call at 800-697-2500. We'll be looking for you.
It's party time. Get a real feel of erotic image featuring Michigan's hottest male and female strippers.
Erotic Image. Add a stripper to any party and watch your party come alive.
Erotic Image delivers the sexiest and most seductive entertainers right to your doorstep or wherever the party's at.
For your next bachelor, bachelorette, birthday, or any party occasion, give the gift that unwraps itself. Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, the name that says it all. Sexy, provocative, outrageous, but all in good fun.
Erotic Image, 888-41-STRIP.
Surf Erotic Image at eroticimage.com, the official home of Brutal Betty, the Erotic Image Dream Girls, the incredible hunks of Men in Motion, and those naughty awesome twosomes, the wild girly girls. Due to popular demand, Erotic Image has hosts and hostesses to kick off your party. Try one.
Go online and explore the Erotic Image Cyber Showcase, view the dancers, check their prices, and place your order online.
Erotic Image, where image is expertise, and the experience is always erotic.
Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP. That's 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, where image is everything.
Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby, on 101 WRIF Detroit.
This is part of this station's public affairs programming, and we try to get issues that you tell us you want to know about. And one of them is about roads and transportation, and I rarely do anything about it. You know, most public affairs programming is about the Histoplasmosis Foundation or something like that, and let Gaia find a cure for that, whatever. But it usually doesn't turn out to be too interesting. And so generally, I've stayed away from roads because usually people are complaining in Michigan there's potholes and whatever. I mean, once in a while we'll talk about rapid transit. Sort of laughing in the background is our guest for today. It's Robert D. Bullard. And Robert Bullard is the Ware Professor of Sociology and Director of the Environmental Justice Resource Center at the Clark Atlanta University. And Robert Bullard, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
My pleasure.
And the book is Highway Robbery, Transportation Racism and New Routes to Equity. Highway robbery, people probably would think, hey, we're getting our tax dollars taken and we're getting crummy roads. But you're after something else, transportation racism, which is probably two words put together that to most people would almost sound accidental. What is transportation racism?
What it is basically nothing new. It's looking at how transportation investments have been used to foster residential segregation and isolation. And it basically looks at how our tax dollars have been used to subsidize racial discrimination in the way that we spend our monies and build our cities.
And I still bet, and it's hard for me to put my brain inside of listeners, but they say, wait a minute. There was an out-migration of Euro-Americans from Detroit beginning probably in the 1950s and really accelerated after the riots of 1967. But, I just drive around out here in the suburbs, and there's freeways, in Detroit as well. So, I mean, I don't get this transportation racism thing.
Well, there's no such thing as a freeway. It's paid for by taxes. And just like most people think of buses as public transportation, the roads are also part of public transportation. And any time when transportation investments, are skewed toward just roads, building roads, and not providing adequate, affordable, and accessible public transportation in terms of buses and trains and other types of generic public transportation, it creates this schism between people who don't have cars, who need to get to jobs when the jobs have left and gone in far places, and people don't have access. Those are the issues that we're dealing with in the book, and it's not new. What it is basically looking at a two-tiered transportation system in America, and in the way that we have used our tax dollars that created and buttressed this two-tiered system, people with cars and people without. And if you don't have a car, and if you're in the area where public transportation is crummy, like Detroit, then it's difficult for people to get to where jobs are when the jobs have left. And usually the jobs have left places and gone to places in areas that are suburban and oftentimes exurbia, where there is no public transportation, and the only way you can get there is with a car.
Now, the book is Highway Robbery. It's published by South End Press. You can go to southendpress.org. I'll have that on my website, peterwerby.com, a little later. Now, 50 years ago, half a century ago, when Detroit really was the Motor City, and the big three actually were the big three, there was a rail system, there was a bus system, there was something called Intercity, which went from Detroit out Woodward to the suburbs out to the north, and now we just have some pretty bad bus service. What is, and this is not unusual in the city of Detroit, how did we go from transportation systems half a century ago that were better than they are today in a lot of the metropolitan areas?
Well, I think what you have is the way that metropolitan regions have developed. In many cases, they've developed around highways and roads and the automobile. And you get what's called suburban sprawl, and you get more and more subdivisions and mega malls and outlying areas that are being developed at the expense of the urban core. And so what you had is basically a dismantling of an efficient public transportation system and opting for the car. And I think, you know, Detroit is not that unique in a number of ways. In terms of metropolitan areas, what does make it unique is that Detroit is one of the largest metropolitan areas that does not have a regional transit system, and that's telling. And I think the fact that you have Detroit is one of the leading areas for job sprawl. About two-thirds of all the jobs that in the metro area are outside of the city, the central city, and so you get this outgrowth of transportation, and how you build the roads, you build the infrastructure, and then again with public dollars, and you get this investments in the outlying areas and the urban and disinvestment in the urban core, and you end up with this donut and this mismatch between where the jobs are and where people that could get those jobs and not having any way to get to them.
These
are major problems in across the country, and Detroit, you know, is one area that's really highlighted.
Now, probably 30 years ago or so, maybe a little longer, it came out that that General Motors and Firestone took part in actually destroying the Detroit rail system. That I one time rode on those streetcars, the rail system in Mexico City, where these streetcars went that so many of our parents and grandparents speak so fondly about. Is that, to your knowledge, because I know in your book, Highway Robbery, Detroit's not one of the essays that are in the book, but is that an accurate description of what happened?
What happened, it was systematic. In terms of how the major corporations really conspired to dismantle the trolley systems and the public transit system, even a place like Los Angeles, which is the automobile capital and it's sprawl, you know, all out, had a very good trolley system, and they were ripped up, and so if you talk about cities now trying to go and develop light rail is nothing more than the old, you know, updated trolley system. And if you talk about this whole question of how race was at the core of a lot of this development and sprawl and out migration, whether it's in Atlanta or whether it's in Detroit, if you look at the core, the central core area in many major cities across the country, they're inhabited largely by people of color. The outlying suburbs don't have transportation, public transportation of any size or note, and you find this this residential segregation and segmentation and what's called spatial mismatch of where the jobs are and where the people are that need the job. And again, you can't just led all at the doorsteps of race. Class is also involved because you still also have some out-migration of middle-class African-Americans and Latinos. But for the most part, in many case studies that we dealt with, it was basically white flight to the suburbs and the outlying areas and blocking any type of public transportation from entering those areas. Here in Atlanta, you know, when we created our transit system, MARTA, M-A-R-T-A, Metropolitan Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, many whites decided that that MARTA stood for moving Africans rapidly through Atlanta, and only two counties actually participated. Now we're stuck in gridlock. The surrounding counties, you know, need some type of rapid transit, public transit, but it's hard to do now because of the politics involved in developing these systems.
Racism very frequently, although there can be unintentional racism. I mean, I usually say to people there's no such thing as accidental segregation, for instance. But you talk about transportation racism, and generally that's thought of with a malignant intent as opposed to just neglect. I guess you wouldn't say benign neglect in this case, but the poor. I mean, you introduced, Robert Bullard, the concept of class as the, you know, one class, the upper working class and the middle class moves out, the lower working class and the poor, which for a lot of reasons, including racism, are predominantly in the Detroit area, people of color. Is there an intent here? I mean, that's doesn't there have to have it, in your mind, be called racism?
Well, whether intended or unintended, the results are the same. In the case of the studies that we did in highway robbery, you know, the intent is there. It's very plain in your face where counties basically opting out for public transportation. They are basically setting up roadblocks, literally roadblocks, to stop any type of regional transportation that is linked, coordinated, and seamless. And in other cases where we found where subsidies are higher subsidies, substantially higher subsidies are paid for commuter rail, which is mostly a white middle class suburbanites commuting in and zipping back out. And at the same time, the buses are falling apart. This is a case in Los Angeles, where, you know, the 95% of the transit riders are on the bus, which are mostly people of color, and at the same time building this expensive rail system that only provides 7% of the riders, but 75% of the money was going to invest in rail. That's a classic case, and it was a lawsuit filed, Title VI civil rights lawsuit, won in the courts. And so the idea that this is something that is accidental or just happened to occur, it's the facts really don't really show that. And even if it is unintentional, the results are such that we create these separate and unequal transportation systems, cars versus public transportation, and create these socially isolated communities where people can't get the jobs, and it creates an unhealthy region. And our position is that it's very difficult to have a healthy and sustainable region if you don't have people who need jobs to get to where jobs are.
Mm-hmm. Now, certainly buses played an almost iconic role as well as a practical role in the civil rights struggle and in the introduction to the book you co-edit, Robert Bullard, Highway Robbery. You have this wonderful historic photo of Rosa Parks, for so long a Detroiter, in Montgomery, Alabama, where she refused to go to the back of the bus, phrase pretty well known as representing the origins of the modern civil rights movement. Why this photo here, and why does that why pick that for the introduction?
Well, it's important because if Ms. Parks would try to ride the bus, either the front of the bus or the back of the bus in Montgomery, she couldn't do it. Montgomery the city has dismantled its bus system.
Huh.
Over the years, it's basically spent all the money in terms of that region on building highways. And so there is no public transportation in Montgomery. You know, the symbol of the Montgomery bus boycott in the 50s, the symbol of the civil rights movement. And so what has happened is that people who live in that area who don't have cars can't get to where the jobs are. The jobs have moved out. It's more than simple.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, too, about you mentioned the Freedom Riders, of course, yeah. Famous aspect of the civil rights movement.
Yeah, it's all there. And even going back over 100 years with separate but equal, you know, the Plessy v. Ferguson Supreme Court case, it was about transportation. The whole Jim Crow was based on separate unequal transportation, on trains, and it codified Jim Crow for a whole bunch of areas. And we're now coming up on the 50th anniversary of Brown v. Board of Education that overturned Jim Crow. So the issue of transportation and civil rights and racism, it's still, these issues are still around, and I think the fact that tax dollars are being used to create separate and unequal, that's something that is illegal, and it has to be dealt with, and I think more and more communities are dealing with it, you know, from New York to Los Angeles and a host of cities in between.
Well, I want to get to some of these individual essays because Highway Robbery is a collection of essays that you and others have edited, but I actually want to just ask one more question. It's sort of an article of, I don't know, faith, is it, that we need, for no other reason, rapid transportation to get rid of all the traffic, all the pollution. Environmentalists are all really big on it. But in a city like Detroit, Atlanta may be the same, where you're based, the idea that we would give up our individual big cars or even little cars and instead be crammed into buses, streetcars, or trains probably doesn't appeal to a lot of people. I would think people would probably around here, again, I'm guessing for other people, would think, hey, I want to, you know, be in my big SUV and listen to the morning show. So, is there any literature out there? Have you done any work on finding, do people actually want rapid transit?
Well, you know, there's been a number of surveys, and we actually deal with this in the book, is that people, when there are alternatives, real alternatives to driving, people will, you know, give up their cars. And in terms of if it's efficient, if it's affordable, if it's clean, you know, if it's accessible, you'd go to Washington D.C. and you look at what, you know, the metro, and you look at people who opt not to drive, to get out of the traffic, even here in Atlanta, where people, you know, up north where the traffic gridlock is horrendous, you know, getting from the northern suburbs to the airport, Atlanta Airport, which is the busiest in the world, is an hour and a half.
Wow.
And you can park your car at the Sandy Springs metro stop, which is a rapid train, and get there in 40 minutes. So when people have alternatives to driving, and when people understand that having clean, affordable, efficient public transportation as alternatives also improves air quality. And since everybody breathes the air, there is no black air or white air or Hispanic air, it means that everybody wins. And so this whole issue of transportation equity and transportation justice does not mean forcing people to get out of their cars, but providing opportunities and alternatives for people who choose to not drive. And for those transit dependents and people who don't have cars, also making sure that there's a good way for them to get to the places they need to get to for work and play and school and health and et cetera. That's what it's all about.
The book is Highway Robbery, Transportation, Racism, and New Routes to Equity, and it's edited by Robert D. Bullard, our guest, Glenn S. Johnson, and Angel O. Torres as well. There's several cities that you look at here, Los Angeles, Atlanta, your city, New York City, San Francisco, Pittsburgh, Baltimore. What suggested those cities over, say, Cleveland or Detroit or, you know, some other city?
Yeah, the cities that we selected for the case studies were cities that had very active community organizations, grassroots groups on the ground organizing to ensure that transportation dollars and investments are spent in an equitable way. Either they had filed lawsuits or administrative complaints, or basically had really gotten involved in changing the way that various community leaders and elected officials view transportation. And so since transportation touches everything, where we live, work, play, go to school, these cities were places where that were really out front in trying to make sure that the transportation dollars didn't all get spent outside of the city.
Now, Martha Navandella's in Dancing in the Streets says, don't forget the Motor City. So that wasn't that you forgot it, because you appear to know a lot about it. It's just that our organizing efforts, I guess, aren't up to some of the others. Well, tell us about how some of the other cities, maybe since you live in Metro Atlanta, what's happening there? What kind of efforts would we be seeing if we were in Atlanta?
Well, you know, the Atlanta rapid transit system, as I say, was started in the 60s. It was supposed to have been five counties, and only two opted to be in it. And again, race was the reason why the outlying counties opted out. But today, we find those same counties now building their own bus systems around and integrated into MARTA, our transit system, because people in those far suburbs and up north are stuck in traffic and they're breathing the same dirty air that everybody else is breathing. Now I think people are coming around. Even the Chamber of Commerce is coming around and saying that we have to really do something about air quality, about traffic and gridlock, because it's hurting business. You know, a lot of the corporations are that we're talking about moving here, relocating, have said no. And some of the ones that are already here are saying we have to do something. If we don't do something about the traffic, we're leaving. So, you know, it makes good business sense. It makes good health sense to talk about good transportation, good alternatives, and good air. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not rocket science. And so I think even the people in Atlanta that thought of themselves as just, you know, living by the car, many of people are now saying if we have good, efficient public transportation, we will, you know, give up our car 3 days a week. And what has also happened is that Bell South, one of our largest employers in the region, moved its suburban offices to be near a MARTA train stop, so that it provides for their employees to be able to not drive. And so we have transit-oriented development, new types of development, office buildings and condominiums being developed near the metro stop. There are spillover effects that have now been planned into this new idea of how transportation investments can spur redevelopment and new types of innovative communities and neighborhoods and revitalization that otherwise may not occur when other monies are not there. Transportation dollars and transportation investments is probably the largest urban policy program that we have going for us right now.
So this isn't just when these organizing efforts take place to get some transportation justice. This isn't just the poor, but I mean this is something that affects all people in different segments of the community.
Oh, yes. When we talk about this whole question of transportation justice, it's not just about poor people. And I think when people start thinking that, you know, that transportation, you know, really, for example, New York City. You look at New York City, and if you ever go to New York City and ride the subway, you know that you can have some of everybody on the subway.
Sure.
And when you talk about being able to get around, many people, 40% of the people in New York, you know, don't even own cars. And so when you talk about this whole idea of what public transportation is, we're talking about changing the idea of public transportation from this rickety, dirty, smelly bus to clean, affordable, efficient, and accessible transportation that anybody would be proud to ride, not just you know, a poor person on welfare who doesn't have any way to get around.
Now, of course, when we look at a country where I'm sure Georgia is no different than Michigan, we're cutting services everywhere. All this money is going to, you know, to rebuild the Iraq. We destroyed $130 billion already spent. I mean, I interviewed a suburban city manager about getting some rapid transit down the main city street, Woodward. And, of course, what it always comes up against is, where do we get the money?
Yeah, that's a big problem. And I think the fact that In many cases, states are hurting in terms of their budgets and deficits, and cities are also hurting. And I think the fact that we have to find the money for reinvesting and retooling our transportation. You know, if you talk, you know, 9/11 taught us that, you know, if we're just totally dependent upon one way of moving from one place to the other, in that case, to move from city to city, you know, the airport or the airlines, you know, and not have a good, efficient interstate rail system and intra-city rail system, we're in trouble. And I think if you know, when you travel in Europe and look at the way the transit systems are set up and the way that they're really can get people to where they need to get to, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. But I think if we can find, you know, $85, $86 billion to rebuild Iraq, we can definitely rebuild our transit systems in our American cities, I would hope.
Well, I think we might have to make some political choices along the way. The book is Highway Robbery, Transportation Racism, and New Routes to Equity. My guest has been Robert D. Bullard, and he is the Ware Professor of Sociology and Director of the Environmental Justice Resource Center at Clark Atlanta University. It's available from South End Press. You can go to southendpress.org. It should be available at most bookstores. Try your independent ones first, please. Robert D. Bullard, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
My pleasure.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways. Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air. Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today. Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream. It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too. WRIF.com or Riff Rock is coming right up.
The case of home loan applicant Stacy Woods, a kind, gentle marketing manager.
Bill, this report reads like it was written by a fourth grader. You are so fired.
Occasionally, she had trouble with coworkers.
I asked for a dressing on the side.
Waiters, too. In fact, lately, Stacy had trouble with lots of people. As a first-time home buyer, she was quite tense about having to make a large down payment. Then Stacy went to Washington Mutual Home Loans. They explained the entire process and gave her a loan with a low down payment. This made Stacy more pleasant.
Listen, Bill, sorry I yelled earlier. You are so not fired. That said, your report was awful. So I signed you up for some beginning writing courses. Nouns, verbs, you know, that kind of thing. Good luck.
Stacy Woods, teacher, grammar expert, new homeowner. Washington Mutual Home Loans, the power of yes, an equal housing lender.
Call 1-888-WAMU-LEND so you can get into the house without the hassles. That's the power of yes.
There's a number you can call that guarantees you the lowest mortgage rate, period. That number is 1-888-64-DAVID. That's 1-888-64-DAVID. It's the number to CompleteMortgageSearch.com. One call, that's all. Or one click, it's that quick. 1-888-64-DAVID. And CompleteMortgageSearch.com begins the search, your search. They do it all. They survey the reputable lenders and present you with the best of the best rates. You don't waste time. You don't lose money. One call, that's all. One click, it's that quick. 1-888-64-DAVID. No hassle. 1-888-64-DAVID. No fooling. CompleteMortgageSearch.com. They do the work. You get the money. 1-888-64-DAVID. One call, that's all.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's spring 2004 semester. Register on the web at www.oaklandcc.edu or visit any of OCC's 5 convenient campuses to register for your choice of classes in literally hundreds of subjects. Classes like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you're a 4-year university student and want to get some classes out of the way before you go back in the fall, or if you just want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield.
And, boy, I opened up the paper the other day, and I was thinking in a few years, a lot of years, whatever, I'm going to be maybe facing, instead of my golden years, a crisis where there won't be any Social Security, there won't be any Medicare. Many of you have seen those same scare headlines. Here's one from AP. Medicare heading towards bankruptcy. Paul Krugman writes an article in the New York Times, The Medicare Muddle. Another one, Medicare overseers expect costs to soar in coming decades, and on and on and on. And so this is very troubling to me, and kind of hard to think through for yourself. And so I'm invited somebody to our broadcast that can help us out with it. It's Alan Sager, and he is the co-director of the Health Reform Program at Boston University's School of Public Health. Alan Sager, welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, this is kind of a panic headline, isn't it? Medicare, we're all thinking we're going to be taken care of in our old age, and suddenly we're told it's heading towards bankruptcy, is it?
Well, it is certainly now this year in worse shape than it looked last year. But this has happened up and down before, and when things get bad enough, we'll probably finally decide to fix Medicare. But for now, Congress is certainly laboring under a huge burden.
Which is what?
They're trying to run away from the problem.
Okay.
And it's very hard to fix a problem while you're running away from it.
Now, part of what the conservatives tell us is that it's because it's this enormous federal bureaucracy that is inefficient, and if there was a large amount of privatization, that would fix the problem, that the market forces would take care of themselves and wouldn't operate at a loss. Is privatization the way to go?
Well, I like the free market as much as anyone, I think. Unfortunately, we don't have a free market anywhere in healthcare except sometimes for eyeglasses. So my Bible tells me not to worship a golden calf.
Okay.
And also, Medicare has administrative costs of only around 2 or 3%. Show me an HMO or a private insurance company that comes close to that.
Mm-hmm.
So Medicare privatization is not a way of saving money. Really, Medicare privatization is a way for Congress to run away by saying to older people, well, we'll give you some money, but you go out in the marketplace and buy an HMO policy or an insurance policy that'll cover your cost. See, when Congress does that, then older people are on the hook for the next price increase and the one after that. So you either come up with more cash out of pocket or you trim the benefits that you get. So Congress sees privatization as a smokescreen and a shock absorber.
Huh. Well, Alan Sager, maybe I was remiss as a host in not maybe even going to basics and saying, tell us what the Medicare system is, because I suspect, I know there's seniors, and I've even spoken at some of their gatherings, so I know there's seniors listening to this broadcast, but probably most of the people are not seniors, and many of them are even, I've spoken to them as well, and they're teens. So we're talking maybe a half a century before some of our listeners are even going to be thinking about retirement. So give me a little history of Medicare and what it provides and who's eligible.
Medicare is a classic Great Society program from the Johnson administration. Provides health insurance for people over 65 and also people who are badly disabled and also people with kidney failure. It has two main parts till now. One is Part A for hospital care, and the other is Part B for doctor services, and a few other odds and ends are there. The two big things left out of Medicare from the beginning was, first, long-term care, and the second one was prescription drug coverage. Last December of 2003, the president signed a Medicare prescription drug benefit that Congress finally passed, but it won't take effect until 2006, if it goes into effect even then.
Well, and what does it provide? I mean, you told us what it provided, but in other words, if I'm 65 years old, I just go to I essentially have what the conservatives used to call socialized medicine?
Well,
what everyone else calls a national health program?
Well, you get to choose your own doctor,
mm-hmm.
go to whichever hospital you want, and Medicare essentially works with every doctor and every hospital. There's minimal interference with the practice of medicine, And Medicare, as originally written, was a blank check for hospitals and doctors. Since that has become so expensive in recent years, Medicare has cut back and it pays hospitals and doctors by somewhat tighter formulas. But the key thing going on in the background here, and this is something that really so few of us know, healthcare spending overall in the United States is just enormous. We spend four times as much on healthcare as we spend on national defense.
Really? That's amazing, given that this is increasingly a warfare state.
Well, this is how the numbers look year after year. And this has been a long-established trend. Right now, healthcare is close to $1 in six in the whole economy.
Yeah.
And that makes it hard to export jobs. Sorry, it makes it hard to export cars and things to other countries because our healthcare costs are such a huge millstone around the neck of everybody doing business in the United States.
However, then when people, as a matter of decency, I would say, no other way to describe it, people like myself and others will say, well, we should have a national health program where everyone's included so we don't exclude 40 to 70 million people, depending on how you're counting. And yet, from what you just said, it seems like it would be impossible to do something like that.
Well, or you can look at it the other way. When you're spending $1.8 trillion on health care, we're obviously spending enough already to take care of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The frustrating thing is that half of what we spend on health care, probably, is wasted.
Half?
Care that doesn't work, care that's incompetently provided, mountains of unnecessary paperwork, hugely excessive prices for things like prescription drugs, and even outright theft.
Well, do this. Go through maybe some of those things, because I know that you're concerned with what you call genuine cost controls. Where could we control? I mean, one of the things that's come up the most recently, of course, is prescription drug prices, which are just through the roof.
And that's the easiest problem to fix in the United States. Not easy, but easier than all the others. Because this year we're going to spend $250 billion on health care. Sorry, on prescription drugs. $250 billion on prescription drugs, and that's been doubling every 5 years. So if we do not control prices, in 5 years we'll be up to $500 billion just on drugs. And we give the world's drug makers half of their worldwide revenue this year. And that's nice of us because we're only 5% of the world's people. Trouble is we can't do it. And 70 or 80 million of us have no drug coverage today. So that's no good. What we need to do is cut drug prices. Now, some people talk about importing drugs from Canada, but we don't have to wash our pills in a Canadian laundromat to get them clean. We can control prices here politically the same way that the government of Canada or of England or all the other countries in Europe control prices.
How do they do it?
Direct government action.
In other words, they say, this is what you can charge.
Right. And, of course, the drug makers squeal and say, well, then we won't have any research and you'll all die. I'm always
right.
Relieved to know we have a choice on this death business.
Yeah.
Drug makers seem to be promising us immortality.
Yeah.
If we just give them all our money.
Yeah.
But, really, if we could we could cut drug prices in the state of Michigan or throughout the country to Canadian levels, and the drug makers would take an initial revenue hit of around $60, $70 billion. But what happens when you cut the price of something?
Well, people start buying more.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would replace much or most of the lost revenue. And then even if you cut prices through government price controls, a lot of people could not afford with their own money even the newly discounted prices. So there would be public subsidies to help them afford their medications. And then all the lost revenue that the drug makers suffered from the original price cut would be replaced. And the drug makers have to make a lot more pills, but this is the good news. The extra cost of making more pills is tiny.
Sure.
And so you pay them the actual manufacturing cost of the additional prescriptions. They are financially whole for their profits and their ability to finance research. And we get all the meds we need for $10 or $15 billion a year more.
Well, they'd have less money to contribute to political campaigns then as well. I'm sure that would hurt all of us in the democratic process. But I'm being facetious, of course. Alan Sager is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's the co-director of the Health Reform Program at the Boston University School of Public Health. And we are talking about Medicare. Is there a crisis? Yeah, there is, but it doesn't have to be this way. And we're talking about genuine cost controls. The bureaucracy, that's something that conservatives always say. That's inherent in government. And if we turned it over to these efficient corporations, we could probably have genuine cost controls. How do you respond to that, Alan Sager?
If we had a free market, that would be true. But since we don't have a free market, it's a joke. The evidence from the experiments with Medicare privatization and getting people to join HMOs and other managed care arrangements when they're on Medicare shows clearly that Medicare cost goes up. And the evidence is clear. Someone once called a fanatic somebody who redoubles their effort after they forget their objective.
Yeah.
By that definition, this Congress and President are fanatics on Medicare privatization. It will cost money. It will enrich HMOs with profits and administrative expenses, and Medicare will become more and more insolvent. Let's stop kidding around and pretend that competition or non-existent free markets can fix this problem. Instead, let's look at the heart of the cost problem. And the biggest problem is clinical waste, which is unnecessary surgery or defensive medicine to keep from being sued or incompetent care from Dr. Shaky Hands, the 1 or 2 or 3% of physicians who should not be practicing.
Go through each of those. Those are interesting because I'm reviewing sort of my experiences. You know, it strikes me, too, and maybe in answering you could speak to this, is the more assertive, almost to the point of aggressive you are as a patient, I would say, and I guess it tends to make sense, the more middle class you are, the better the treatment that you get. I mean, usually I've found, I have little to complain about, but then I just hear, you know, like horror stories beyond belief from other people that are much more passive or poorer or minorities.
Or worried. It's hard to be a consumer of healthcare because you're sick and worried, and want you focus on getting well. Most of us do. And you know, some free market fanatics want patients to have to pay more out of pocket, so they'll scrutinize what their doctor tells them more closely. Doctor, do I really need that MRI scan or that surgery? Or and why are you charging so much for the operation? It's hard for patients to think that way because the next time they meet that surgeon, the patient will be horizontal and unconscious and barely dressed, and the doctor will have a sharp knife in his hand.
Hmm.
So it's hard to be a consumer, an effective consumer. But if you want to go through the three, unnecessary care, so much of it, unfortunately, seems to be driven by how we pay doctors, which is usually what's called fee-for-service, where so much per operation, so much per visit, so much per X-ray. And when doctors make more money when they give more care,
they give more care. Yeah, yep. Well, that makes sense.
Sure. And then there's defensive medicine, where the doctor worries about being sued and does a lot of unnecessary tests and referrals to specialists and all that, which are very expensive. And often doctors just don't have the evidence that would guide them in deciding what care a patient needs. And there's a lot of science in healthcare, but not nearly enough yet. And often doctors don't consult the science that's available. And then there's incompetent care, which the current malpractice system does very little to weed out. The big thing here is that in healthcare, doctors control 80% of the $1.8 trillion we'll spend on healthcare this year. They get 20 cents on the dollar. They authorize the hospital care and the prescription drugs and the nursing home care.
They usually, though, present themselves as the victim of high insurance costs and, you know, that, in other words, that they're more or less powerless within the system. I'm surprised to hear that, to learn that, actually.
Well, I think we have a case of competing truths. There are two truths here. The doctors are victims, but they are also potentially very powerful, and they do spend the money. The way to contain cost and the way to make Medicare solvent is to say to doctors, here's 80% of $1.8 trillion. Spend it carefully, take care of everybody, weed out the care that doesn't work and the care of marginal, low, low value, and come back and see us next fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
That way, the doctors take clinical responsibility and financial responsibility. We can also set it up so their share of the pie is fixed, so they don't make more money if we get less, fewer days in the hospital or fewer prescriptions. The whole idea is to make the doctors financially neutral, to liberate them to think clinically about what we need and how best to spend the money. That way everybody stops whining and we all act like grown-ups and we say the dollars are not unlimited, the dollars are finite, and pathology is remorseless, so let's spend it carefully and get as much medical security as we can for everyone.
You know, I was going to make an observation that let me just back up to the first one though about excessive medical care or procedures. I put my hand through a plate glass window, cut it pretty badly, and I went to a hand, I can't remember, was it the hospital or a hand surgeon, but they said they wanted to take X-rays of it to see, and I said, well, you know, it was glass. If anything, you can't see anything there. And they wanted 5 X-rays of my hand from different angles. And I said, this is nuts. I mean, you know, it's not broken. I have movement of it. I just, you know, so the long and the short of it was I have visions. I mean, so let's say that they made, you know, X amount of dollars off of doing 5 unnecessary X-rays, saying that it's unnecessary. However, say that they didn't do them. The guy said, okay, I won't do it. And then something goes wrong. He anticipates, you know, sitting in court with my lawyers saying, so you did no X-rays of Mr. Werby's hand. Did you? Isn't the current, accepted procedure 5? You know, so isn't actually risk and a contributing factor as well?
Sure. And that's where we have to probably change, go away from the current malpractice system, and move toward, first, making sure doctors have actual evidence on what to do, clinical guidelines on what to do when a hand is bleeding. And this is what's written down, and this is what everybody does. Then, if a patient does suffer harm while getting medical care, most patients say they want 3 things if they suffer harm. First, they want an apology, which doesn't happen today because that can be seen used in court as an admission of guilt. They want an apology. They want to be made whole financially for lost wages and for the cost of the health care they need to fix the problem. And third, they want confidence that won't happen to somebody else down the road. That's a very human approach.
Sure.
And we don't need lawyers for that. We need good evidence, and we need doctors checking up on other doctors to make sure that everybody's playing by the rules. And we need kindness, and we need health insurance for everybody, and then simple workers' comp and other methods to replace lost wages through social insurance. That's how the rest of the world essentially does it.
Hmm. Well, Alan Sager is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. He's the co-director of the Health Reform Program at Boston University's School of Public Health. We're talking about the future of Medicare and whether it, in fact, is endangered. I suspect, I mean, I could be wrong, but given what we know of the healthcare system, given our immersion in it as patients, I can't believe there's too many people listening that say, boy, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, it all makes sense, what you're saying. And yet, if we're blowing $130 billion plus on destroying Iraq and then rebuilding it, giving it to the corporations that are doing it and to the Pentagon, there's no money for anything. I mean, even at reduced cost, it would seem. And that's what is so disturbing to me. We have the wherewithal within us society to live, all of us, much better than we are, to provide services for all of us much better than we are, except what's missing, and you indicated that about Congress running away from the program, the political will seems to be, you know, hovering at around 2%.
I think the pressure to fix health care is growing. We see that, first of all, with prescription drugs, where people know, we know we are hurting. And for the rest of health care, we're not far behind, because more and more people who work and families and businesses simply cannot afford health insurance that keeps becoming 10 or 15 or 20% more expensive every year. So even the folks in Washington will pay attention. Right now, they are ideologically challenged because their first knee-jerk response is free market, let the market do it. Unfortunately, then you have the golden calf problem because there is no free market, and you got to turn to a solution that actually matches healthcare reality. And that's where, because we spend $1.8 trillion on healthcare, that's probably the only part of our whole country that already has enough money to do the job.
Hmm.
Anything else you care about, cleaning the environment, job training, rebuilding manufacturing, infrastructure, education, criminal justice, and all the rest, they probably need more money. In healthcare, we've got enough money, and we have to stop whining for more.
Well, is there, this perceptual problem on... when I've talked about this on talk shows I've done, people will say, well, we have the best health system in the world, yet you're quoted here as saying other wealthy nations cover all of their citizens who live longer and on average spend only one half as much per person as we do. And we just covered the financial part of it, but covering all their citizens and living longer. I mean, do we have the world's best health system?
No. We have pretty good care for people with pretty good insurance. But we know other countries are not perfect. They have problems. The Canadians, for example, do suffer waits for some elective surgery. But the reason for that is that they don't spend enough. And when their economy wasn't doing well for 8 or 10 years a while back, they cut back on their health spending. And that's when the waiting lists really started. If we had Canadian health system ways of paying and covering people, with U.S. money, not many of us would be walking around with the organs we were born with. We'd be getting so much care.
Hmm.
So there's so much room for hope. We're smart. We have good doctors, good hospitals, those that are still open. I think you're down to about 8 in the city of Detroit, last time I counted.
They're dropping. Didn't you tell me when we were arranging this at one time, what was there, 60 hospitals in Detroit?
That's correct.
Wow, it's amazing.
And there's clear evidence from the work I've done tracking about 1,200 hospitals in 51 cities that the hospitals that close are actually more efficient, less expensive than the ones that survive, decade after decade, which is further proof that we don't have a functioning free market.
Well, I think what we have to do is get our eyes off of gay marriage or being upset about it, and let people do what their love tells them to do, and start thinking about our families and our futures. And one of them is to talk real seriously about health reform. My guest has been Alan Sager. He's the co-director of the Health Reform Program at the Boston University's School of Public Health. Their website is healthreformprogram.org. All of this will be on my website. Alan Sager, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Glad to be here.
Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby and produced by OD. Stay tuned for more Riff Rock coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit. We'll be right back.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
The party just doesn't stop at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Every week at Leopard's Lounge, they bring you new girls from all over the world, so it never gets boring. And these girls are hot. Plus, unlike other gentlemen's clubs, at Leopard's Lounge, you never pay a cover charge, ever. They even have free parking. It's the best entertainment value around. This Tuesday night, join Mike Walters from the Riff's Drew and Mike Show for a special Tuesday night Riff Bash. Mike will have tons of giveaways and lots of other special surprises. Come on, guys, you work hard. You deserve a night out. So make sure you make it to Leopard's Lounge and enjoy the finer things in life. You know what I'm talking about. Beer and sexy, beautiful women from all around the world. We'll see you this Tuesday night at Leopard's Lounge in Windsor for a special Riff party. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge and Broil.
More unstoppable rock. Next on the Riff.
There is nothing funny about divorce. And any law firm that makes jokes about divorce doesn't really understand the pain and hurt involved. But there is a law firm that understands and cares. Fred, Father's Rights for Equality in Divorce. A law firm that specializes in representing men in divorce and family law and making sure they get a fair deal in court and from their own attorney. You don't have to lose your home, lose your business, or lose your children. Call Fred at 248-356-7777. For a free telephone consultation. You'll speak to an experienced attorney who goes to court every day and has finalized hundreds of divorce and family law cases. And when you call Fred, you won't be turned over to a young associate. The attorney you meet with is the attorney who will work on your case, answer your questions, deal with her attorney, and go to court with you. It's the best answer for men in divorce and family law. Call Fred, 248-356-7775. Fred, Father's Rights for Equality in Divorce. Call 248-356-7775.
Drew and Mike in the morning.
Show us what you know, mister.
Unstoppable Riff Rock all day.
Prepare to be dazzled.
World famous. 101 WRIF Detroit.
Silhouettes above the cradle. Hold me down. They won't let me go the wrong way. My mother taught me all the fables, told me how in the end all the sinners have to pay. But I don't wanna live like my mother. Breaking, you wore them down.